This has got to stop.
Yeah.
What kernel are we on now?
I've lost count. I'm being perfectly honest. I have no idea.
Count zero. This isn't a computer kernel. This is, I'm talking about the KFC kernel.
Mm-hmm.
It was recently announced that Vincent Kartheiser, you know, Pete from Mad Men?
Yeah.
Is the new kernel. This is after we've gone through, I think George Hamilton was the last kernel.
Okay.
Did it start with Daryl Hammond?
It might have.
I believe that he was the first celebrity colonel, and then we moved to Norm MacDonald.
Yeah, I was going to say Norm MacDonald.
I think Jim Gaffigan did it.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're up to Vincent Kartheiser. And you would say against type. I would say Norm MacDonald's against type.
Yeah.
Gilbert Gottfried would be really against type, and I can't wait for that one.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Enjoy my chicken. That's chicken. It's not a duck. It's not a duck, but it's chicken.
Yes, yes.
I'd rather have duck.
He used to do Affleck, exactly.
Yeah, he used to do Affleck. So Vincent Kartheiser has apparently decided, yes, I will sell chicken. I'm from Minnesota. I don't know what I know about chicken.
Yeah, I know.
He's playing like, so the new sort of pitch is that he's like a hot, he's supposed to be hot.
Yeah,
that's the point.
Young colonel.
I don't know how this fits into the timeline. Maybe it's worse. I think in the commercial, it's sort of set in the sort of 60s or late 50s. And so maybe we're going back in time. This is like the colonel when he was a kid. But it's to promote KFC's new Nashville hot flavor of chicken.
And they've
got him. I would say he's sort of like half Elvis, half Bob Dylan. He's got like the Elvis pompadour and the style. But he's got a guitar, and he's got like the you know, the coat hanger that Bob Dylan always wore to hold his his harmonica.
Harmonica.
But it's like a chicken finger instead of harmonica.
It's so ridiculous.
Which if they don't sell at KFC, they're really missing out.
Yes, I agree.
I would love one of those.
Yeah.
The only problem is you have to get somebody to load it for you.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the chicken finger is not the right key. For this song, I'm going to need a chicken finger in G. So we'll have to do that instead.
for this song, I want to start with a half note of chicken and not a whole note of chicken.
Well, that's easy. You just, there it's half a note of chicken. So yeah, nobody knows what they're doing with this, but I'm trying to, where could this go in the future?
The moon?
Because
I mean, we're going to end up in outer space, right?
Yeah. Dos Equis finally retired the most interesting man.
Yes.
And they sent him to Mars or something. Like he left the planet, like Pucci, like he can't come back.
Right.
And he died on the way there. But they got a new guy, and he looks like a young version of the older guy.
Yep.
And I'm not paying attention. I don't know if he's actually supposed to be the older guy. And I think companies like Old Spice have certainly opened the door to completely nonsensical advertisement.
Absolutely.
To the point where if they did a thing where he's so interesting that he invented the time machine in the 60s and then just came forward to our time to share his interestingness with us, I'd believe that.
Yeah, I would too. Absolutely.
And so they've done that too. Maybe, first of all, we need to open it up to all races, creeds, and colors. So I want to see Idris Elba be the next colonel.
Oh my God.
Okay, so I should have saved that for the end of the segment because the segment's now over.
Yeah,
because a lot of people would argue that Colonel Sanders has a very troublesome sort of connotation as a white southern landowner.
Yeah, plantation.
Well, there's no chicken plantation, but yeah.
Yeah.
Just out there picking the chickens.
But these chickens aren't going to grow themselves.
This is getting dangerous.
No.
They actually literally do. So that might not work. Although it would be them embracing. Well, they couldn't do it. They just couldn't do it.
No.
But it'd be them showing like, we don't care.
Right.
You said that. You said that we were, that it's racist. It doesn't matter to me.
Right.
Get Kevin Hart in here. I don't care.
Oh, sure. Do you think, I don't remember KFC's commercials being this aggressive before. Are they having to compete with Popeyes a lot more, do you think?
That's a good question. I think you're right there. I also think that they don't have to really advertise much.
Right. Like only Coca-Cola,
Everybody, yeah, right. Exactly. KFC. Who doesn't know KFC?
Right.
I seem to remember like, maybe more than 10, 15 years ago, stories about them not doing so well. People like weren't into chicken anymore. But there's so much disposable income now. And there's so much, like we have this thing now, and welcome to this show where we're just the total exemplar of it. But even older people act young.
Oh,
so
yeah,
instead of being
true.
Like, well, I want a pork chop now, and where are my kids? Did you pick them up from daycare? Now it's like, dude, I'm 43. Let's get some hot blazing chicken fingers. So you have to continue to market to those people. But I think you're right about, you know, Popeye slash Louisiana coming up their tail.
Yeah.
But also it's just, you have to remind people every once in a while that...
they exist.
Yeah, that they exist. Oh, yeah, chicken. Let's get some chicken.
Yeah.
I wish their sides were better.
Yeah.
And then also they have a ton of money because doesn't, like, Pepsi owns them, right?
Oh, I didn't know that.
So their parent company is...
is Pepsi Cola. Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. It's all like a big PepsiCo like conglomerate, I believe.
Okay.
So anyway, yeah.
I was wondering too, like, do you think that the story that came out recently that the secret spices like has been published, do you think that maybe that's hurting them a little bit?
I don't remember if we talked about it on the show, but that is something
either.
That happened. There was somebody, if I get the story wrong, just Google it. I'm sure it's somewhere. But they were doing some kind of documentary on the life of Colonel Sanders. And so a journalist was interviewing family member,
right,
possibly the curator of the Colonel Sanders Museum, possibly both. And they were showing them like a scrapbook, like, oh, here's the Colonel when he was playing a guitar with a chicken thing on the coat hanger. And here he is driving his Studebaker. And here's the a picture of the original recipe of, oh, you probably shouldn't see that. And
yep.
The journalist is like, well, I'm a journalist. Like, I can remember 11 things, and I'm going to tell everybody about it.
Right. Which, I don't know.
You have to imagine that the person closed the book and went, please don't tell anybody about this.
Yeah, no
and
kidding.
And he was like, I can't promise anything. I am going to stop at KFC on the way home, though, because delicious.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, much luck to KFC. And like I said, they got all the money in the world. They don't have to worry about it.
No, they don't.
Actually selling any. They're just having fun.
They're absolutely having fun.
And as much as I hate advertising, I appreciate or approve of this kind of advertising.
Ridiculousness?
Yeah, because they're going to, and to some degree, except for like the sexism and the irresponsible drinking type thing, I like the Budweiser commercials.
Sure.
Frogs aren't really going to sell you beer.
No.
All it's going to do is build up name recognition. But
absolutely.
I doubt if you were at a liquor store and you're picking something up for a party or something, you're going to think, oh yeah, frogs, Budweiser, there it is. No. You're going to get yelled at when you bring Budweiser to a party.
Yeah, absolutely.
People want their hoppy pumpkin stout IPAs. What Bud should be doing, and I think they are doing this, is creating like craft Bud beers.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because now the whole, we got to diversify. We got to find, people can't just drink Merca. They just can't drink that. We got to give them Bud Ice or Bud Dry or whatever it is.
Right.
And now that's being filled by all these hipsters who are going off and drinking pale lager. I don't know anything about beer.
Super hoppy stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Just like splashing some water on a piece of hops and just digging in.
Exactly.
And so Budweiser has to compete with that somehow.
Yeah, they do. They got to keep the wax mustache.
I do know
happy.
A little bit about beer. At least I think that the ironic thing, and welcome to the show, by the way, it's a Just Enough Trope podcast. We're right in the middle of a beer discussion, believe it or not. Kind of nerdy, I guess.
It has a nerd element.
This is something that we don't really know anything about. I'm your host, Caliban, joined as always by my co-host.
Hi, I'm Mikan Hanna.
And the thing I wanted to say is that I think Bud beer is like super pasteurized or filtered.
Okay.
Or whatever.
Sure.
Like, like if you made a beer yourself.
Yes.
At home, because you're in a mumblecore movie, and that's like the job that you want to have or something.
Yep.
I like Drinking Buddies. It's a good movie. it's always like cloudy, or it's like, oh, we put a lot of pumpkin in this one.
Right.
And Bud is the opposite. They've filtered it, cold filtered it like 16 times to make it like as clear and as drinkable as possible.
Yeah.
And that's not what people like these days. But
that's
it actually
true.
Takes more money and effort to make that beer. So the cheapest beer you can possibly get in America takes the most time to make.
Yeah.
You don't just throw some hops and some barley in a thing for a couple of weeks and come back.
Delicious.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, right. And just send it off on its way. I just thought that was ironic. It'd be like if Speak and Spells were $1 million and like iPhone 7s were like 50 cents. That economy doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, you're totally right, too, about it being so watered down. Like, I've definitely heard people talk about Bud, especially Bud Light.
No, kids may want to chew their beers.
Yeah, exactly. As Bud Light being, like, just like a step up from water.
isn't that the Blue Ribbon, the Pabst Blue Ribbon?
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
PBR?
It probably gives it a run for its
ASAP.
Money.
ASAP.
Yeah.
PBR me. Okay, maybe advertising is dangerous because it just sticks in your brain.
Yes.
Like wet clay. Well, we're not talking about ads today, but we are talking about promotion. One of the things we wanted to talk about was all the news that's coming out of New York City Comic Con. A Comic Con that, by all rights, is definitely one of the largest, possibly the largest?
Possibly.
Comic Con. It's run by Reed Pop, and Reed Pop is very good at promoting their shows. I don't think that's bad.
No.
We've been talking about promotion and advertisement. And they will be very front or upfront with you about the numbers. I think last year they claimed to have 150,000 people go through the gate.
Okay.
Which, I don't know how that's humanly possible. Like, that is
an
amazing amount of people. And I'm sure that San Diego exceeds that, at least matches it. And so it's, I would call it probably the number two in terms of size convention in the country. I think Emerald City, another Reed Pop show, might be number three. At least that's what we've heard.
I could believe that. Absolutely.
So a lot of news comes out there. And in fact, I think that there's always more actual breaking news at New York City Comic Con than there is at San Diego.
I wonder if that's has anything to do with the time of year or like
possibly.
The films that are coming out
yeah.
at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, San Diego kind of comes at the end of summer. So
yeah.
you're not necessarily getting previews to as many blockbusters, or maybe you're getting little snippets but not trailers of films that are coming out.
Well, you'll get
the
thing where something has been announced and then they'll so it's been announced and you go to the panel for it at San Diego Comic-Con and they've got all the stars are there, you know, Ben Affleck and Gail Godot and everybody from who's going to be in the movie is there,
right?
But they don't have any like news to give you, really. Just
right.
get excited, people.
Yes, this is coming
yeah.
soon.
Or if it's a Harry Potter movie, I guess that'll be out in the holidays time. So you
right.
could, you know, Eddie Redmayne's there or something like that.
Right.
But yeah, New York City's weird. I think like there's a lot of actual real legitimate comic book news. And then there's a good amount of announcements about upcoming TV projects and things. And anyway, that's the kind of thing we'll be talking about today. Mm-hmm. And on the subject of comics, we are doing some comic reviews on the show today. It's not Comic Book Club, but we thought that we would review some new releases, some number ones. Things that we'll give you our opinions on, and you can jump on board right now because they're in the store. Three books we're talking about. I'm going to give you a review of Gennady Tartakovsky's Cage, the new Luke Cage book. I say new. It was actually announced in around 2008, I believe.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And it's just coming out now?
Yeah.
Huh.
Because the TV show's on.
Oh. Okay. Did he write it back in 2008?
He wrote and penciled it, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And I don't think he finished it. And either he, the article I read was like, because he's a busy guy,
yeah.
creator of Samurai Jack, he was a producer and director on Powerpuff Girls for a long time, Dexter's Laboratory he created. So, you know, he's got a lot of stuff going on. I think he started working on it and probably got busy. And when you're Tartakovsky, that means 10 years later or 8 years later or so,
okay.
you go, oh, yeah, you're cleaning out the garage. So we'll talk about that a little later. Mika will review Shade the Changing Girl from DC Comics from their new Young Animal imprint,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of a renewal, reboot, relaunch of the Shade the Changing Man storyline.
Yes.
And she'll talk about how it fits with the old Shade the Changing Man storyline, if it does at all. And then we will do a tandem review at the end of that segment about the new Jessica Jones, number one, from Michael Gatos and Brian Michael Bendis, the artistic team behind Alias, the comic book that introduced Jessica Jones to the world and was, I think, probably the first Max comic, Marvel Max comic,
yeah,
mature readers
right.
comic.
Yeah.
Although, if it wasn't the first, then it was definitely the highest profile.
Yeah.
Mostly because it had the same name as a J.J. Abrams TV show.
Do you think that that helped? Was it? Did the TV show come out first?
Yes, it did.
Oh.
Yes, it did.
That makes me disappointed.
And here's a problem.
Okay.
I remember seeing a billboard for Alias, the show.
Okay.
You know what? Don't quote me on that, but they definitely came out around
the same time.
And David Mack does the covers for all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a painter. He's also somebody who, see, we call like Greg Horn a tracer.
Mm-hmm.
I think we call Greg Horn a tracer. We should call him Hack if we don't call him anything else. And I remember seeing this billboard, and it's like a picture of, oh, it's Sydney Carton? No, that's Tale of Two Cities. Whatever Sydney's last name on Jennifer Garner's character on Alias.
I don't know.
And she's like, oh, she's got a red wig on, because that's what 45-year-old men in the Midwest think is exotic and sexy when she's going undercover. But it's like her face kind of in shadow, and I think people probably know what I'm talking about. And her hair's coming down. And then you look at the cover of Alias, and it is a face that's in shadow. There's no pink hair,
yeah.
but there's this ornate sort of Dave McKean, or I guess a David Mack collage background. And it's like, oh, that's the tracing. There
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, it's very similar.
That's where it came from.
Okay.
Now we know.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So anyway, back to the review of the review, or the announcement of the review. We will be talking about that book a little later. And then, of course, it's the beginning of the week. That means Craft to Services, where we talk about a movie that was rated poorly and thought of highly.
Mm-hmm.
Generally.
Generally.
Do you think most of the movies that we talk about, people actually go, oh, yeah, it's good. It's a good movie.
I think so, or at least have fond memories of. I mean, one that we talked about recently, Willow, is something that like just about everybody our age saw growing up. And has fond memories about whether or not they've seen it as an adult.
Yeah.
So
I think that's probably the key. It's something that you would remember and something that I hope that you would hear the Rotten Tomatoes score, which in this case has to be below 50%, and would go, huh.
Really?
Hello?
Yeah.
Someday we'll flip it around and we'll do movies that have a high Rotten Tomatoes score and are awful.
Ooh.
We catch a couple bricks on this segment, but I think generally we tend to enjoy a lot of the films that we watch.
Yes.
And that's kind of the point of this.
Yeah.
It's stealth enjoying ourselves.
I
know the audience wants to see us suffer, like Fear Factor, for our art.
And sometimes we do.
Sometimes we do.
Like for Willow.
Oh,
I'm
boy.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But this week we're talking about Constantine, the 2005 movie that is an adaptation of the Vertigo comic book, starring Keanu Reeves as John Constantine,
mm-hmm.
a cult magician and con man. And you know, we'll save the rest for the segment itself. All right, well, let's talk about some news. So a ton of news coming out of NYCC at this time. I think probably the biggest thing, at least in my mind, but in a lot of people's minds, is that it has been announced who the main villain will be or be played by for Netflix's Defenders show. Actually, all four stars of the four Defenders shows,
yes.
Daredevil, Iron Fist, Luke Cage, and Jessica Jones, were all on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought out a fifth person announced by Jeff Loeb as the villain, Sigourney Weaver.
I'm really excited about this news.
I'm pretty excited too.
I'm not really sure who she's going to play. But I don't know. I love Sigourney Weaver and I think she's been great in like genre films and everything. So I think she's going to bring something awesome to this. Do you have any guesses as to who she could play in the Marvel Universe?
I've been racking my brains. I think that there are plenty of like C and D list female villains.
Okay.
For the Avengers or the Defenders, kind of these the team books. She's not going to shave her head. If
no,
she played like
Moondragon,
that'd be kind of cool. That's the new Defenders, but still.
Yeah.
This Defenders, they should just call this a Marvel Knights show. It has nothing to do with Defenders, really. Not as we know it. She's the elf with the gun. I don't know. So if she's going to be like a street level character, it gets even worse because I don't know. Like, there's Kingpin. We've got a Vanessa Fisk already.
Yeah, we do.
I was kind of like thinking, hoping she could play like Madame Mask.
I could see that being
who
a possibility.
Who has already been in Agent Carter, so I'm not sure that would really work unless she's like Madame Mask 2. And really the only reason that I wanted to play that is so we can get Count Nefaria in there. I think that would be kind of fun
okay.
to see like a quote-unquote real world, like street level take on Count Nefaria. Try to get like... because he's got connections to all kinds of bad guys. I don't know. Get the Grim Reaper in there. This is all Avengers stuff, I guess.
Sure.
The rumor is Mephisto.
Okay. Tell me about Mephisto. I'm not sure.
Mephisto
really
is the Lord of Hell in Marvel Comics. He's not the biblical Satan, the back of my Marvel trading card from 1991 tells me.
Oh, boy.
But that's mostly just the parents trying to get away from parents' ire for marketing Satan to their kids. But he is Satan, essentially.
Okay.
And
so
with,
she's going to be a female Satan.
Well, you know, he can do it. He can change his sex. He can look however he wants.
Sure.
And the fact that Ghost Rider has appeared on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
mm-hmm.
Some people think lends hellfire to this theory. That's not a thing. As far as a connection between the Defenders or Netflix shows and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Jeff Loeb has said, wait and see.
So that's not a
Which
no.
Which is not an answer at all.
And not a yes.
Not even a little bit.
No. So that's a steadfast maybe.
Yep. That is a, I don't want to piss you off by saying no.
Yep.
We'll see. Are we going to Disney World?
We'll see.
We'll see.
I hated that.
Yeah.
You never want to hear that as a kid.
Child abuse.
Yeah.
Speaking of Iron Fist, as I did previously, the Iron Fist trailer has come out in connection with NYCC, starring Finn Jones as the Iron Fist, Danny Rand. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those trailers that doesn't tell you much. I know this. He punches things.
He totally punches things.
I know he punches.
And his fist glows. It, that much
well,
I know,
it becomes
too.
Like unto a thing of iron.
Yes. So it glows hot.
Well, that's... Okay, no, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that the other day. This is all being interpreted, yes, by, I'm sure, Finn Jones. That's his name, right?
I think so.
I'm sure he went and read every Iron Fist comic book he could get his hands on.
Sure.
You got a director who might have been into comics as a kid. You're collecting all these people who have, and I'm not nerd-shaming them, but I'm just saying a tentative, perhaps, connection to it. And then you get to the effects guys and the people who design the art and stuff like that. What do they know? Did they grow up reading the comics? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Look at all the people that make alien heads for George Lucas.
Sure.
He comes in and he picks 1 out of 10 alien heads, and now we've got Dexter Jetster.
Yeah.
God damn it. And so I just wonder, because are they reinterpreting this? It never in the comics. All it does is his fist glows because it has chi power on it.
Sure.
It isn't becoming like red hot iron.
That, I mean, it looked like red
hot
iron in
the
trailer.
But you, as somebody who doesn't know much about Iron Fist,
yes,
goes, ooh, he's got a red hot iron fist.
That's what it looked like to me.
He doesn't. But yeah. If they say he does, then he does.
Right.
And so I'm not complaining about bastardizing of the original source material. I'm interested to see their interpretation as long as it doesn't suck.
That's completely fair.
What did you think about the rest of the interpretations of the action and the cast?
Well, we saw mostly action in this trailer. There wasn't a whole lot of story elements that getting other than him training martial arts.
Yeah.
And so you don't really get a whole lot about character, really, either. It just like, we trained him to be the best of us and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Who is we?
We know that he's...
We don't know.
Yeah. And they haven't... How could they in a 90-second trailer, but they haven't really... I mean, we know he's a white guy in a tie who kung fus.
Yes.
And so already it looks like that. Oh, no, a white guy is going to be the best kung fuer. Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, and people were already upset when he was cast because people were hoping...
Yeah.
Even though Danny Rand, in the comics... is a white guy.
Yes, but that's the wrong argument.
I know.
The argument is, why can't he be an Asian guy?
Why
now?
Not change the story
yeah.
and make him an Asian guy?
Well, one person, I should say, that they've Asianed up, I already regret that.
Whoa.
Is Colleen Wing.
Okay.
In the comics, she is, I think she's going to be his love interest. They've got it all backwards. Misty Knight dated Danny for years and years.
Really?
She was over on Cage.
Yeah.
And Colleen Wing didn't date any of them. But she's on Iron Fist and looks to be probably the love interest there.
Huh.
But she is a half Japanese, she's a part detective, part samurai. I don't know, it's comic books.
Yeah, sure.
And at one, she actually gets like Danny Rand Iron Fist powers at 1.2.
Mm.
And so but she's always been depicted as a statuesque, you know, redhead with like slightly almond eyes if the artist remembers.
Oh, okay. So, like, I mean, are we even talking about half Japanese here? Like, it almost sounds like a fourth or, you know, grandparent or something like that.
No. Okay, so as far as I remember, mm-hmm. I think her dad is a white guy.
Okay.
Who is like a Asian studies professor or something.
Okay, sure.
And then her mom is a Japanese woman, but she's like the aunts or her ancestors were samurais and ninjas, and she comes from like a long line of like this martial tradition, and so she's like the perfect Pan-Asian. She's the Lian Chin of of martial arts.
Okay, so like because her mom's ancestors were really great
cream
at martial arts
and chicken wings.
Stop it.
Yeah, well,
that's just naturally passed down.
Well, she also trained very hard.
Okay,
and she's played by Jessica Henwick in this, who is of Asian descent.
Mm-hmm.
She's an English actress, but she's of East Asian descent. So yeah, I mean. There you go. That's your bone. It's not
good.
The bone you wanted, which was the, you know, Finn Jones bone guy being an Asian guy.
Right.
Mark DeCasos or whatever is probably punching his hat somewhere. I don't know. I think it looks good. After seeing or waiting for Cage to finally just something to happen, if it's just all kung fu all the time, I'm down.
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't have a problem with it being a lot of kicking ass.
No, but here's the thing, though. And again, I don't ask of my TV shows to not challenge me. Some of my favorite shows are very challenging. But you couldn't do Cage without it being about inner city and issues of urban life. I almost feel, and that's just, we're used to that on TV.
Absolutely.
I almost feel like the Asian thing is going to be like too sort of twisty for them to really get into.
Okay.
Because they're really going to do like a fresh off the boat kind of thing with this.
I don't know.
I feel like
they're
just going to go, yeah, I shouldn't get too cocky because you guys have been doing this for thousands of years. I'm just learning it now. And I think we're just going to start punching people and just move on.
I think you're probably right.
And that's probably best.
Maybe it is.
Because I feel like these shows have good intentions, but I don't think that they are necessarily like mature enough or have enough emotional and social intelligence to really tell the stories they want to tell.
Well, my problem with Luke Cage is just that it's the first couple episodes, which are the only ones I've seen so far, are very philosophical and kind of heady for Luke. Not that he's a smart guy, don't get me wrong, but like, what's wrong with starting with immediate unrest, you know? And like,
immediate unrest,
that's what I meant.
Or in medias res.
Yes.
You're starting immediate rest with immediate unrest.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
You are a subconscious genius.
Why, thank you. Yeah. Should we move on to another story?
Oh, you want to be done?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Just enough dirt left in the hole for you to reach out. I can pull you out.
Yes.
Ant-Man and also The Wasp, which is the name of their next movie, Ant-Man 2, Ant-Man and the Wasp, will feature Evangeline Lilly, and there will be an origin story for the Wasp.
Do we need that?
I don't know.
I kind of wish that they had really introduced her more in the first Ant-Man film.
Yes.
But
I think they're holding back on purpose. And people were like, why wasn't she in Civil War? Because they want to hold back until we see her. This
her
is
origin
their,
story.
Yeah, well, this is their explanation. Her really take the stage in her own movie. And then she will be in Avengers 4 then.
Okay.
What used to be Infinity War Part 2. It's just Avengers 4 now.
Yeah, I know. We're just changing the names all over the place. So, and Inhumans up in the air, if that's going to happen.
Nobody has said boo
nope.
about the Inhumans, and
nope.
I think you can pretty much expect that it's not. Oh, then they haven't really said much about Captain Marvel either, except we have a star. So.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's very true. So it's a little disheartening, actually, because you guys got to get a direct for that, like ASAP.
Yeah. More information, if there is any. It's been announced that Forrest Whitaker is joining the cast of Marvel's Black Panther.
Goo goo gaga.
All right. So I think they did it. This is it. Bingo card full.
Yeah.
I think like Denzel Washington isn't actually on the card. He's just like the star in the middle.
Okay.
With like the free spot for anybody.
Okay.
I don't know how you play bingo. But I think they've got every single black actor who's hot right now, which, great.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
But I mean, up to this point, I thought, he's doing Star Wars, too busy? Nope, got
nope,
it.
Nope, he can do it. He's Reshoot's making time.
Done. Here he is.
Yes.
So that's kind of exciting, I guess. He's going to play the role of Zuri, who is an elder statesman in Wakanda.
Okay.
I don't really know that character.
All right.
So, Florence Kasumba will be in it as well. She was the female bodyguard of Chadwick Boseman's T'Challa in Civil War.
Oh, okay.
The girl that was kind of hanging out with him.
Yes.
So she'll be back for that, too.
When she kind of threatens Black Widow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of strong women characters, if you like Hayley Atwell's Peggy Carter.
I do.
Or if you like her conviction character.
I do not.
She's the right girl for the job. What about now? She will be returning to the role of Peggy Carter, voicing her in an animated form for the Disney XD show, Secret Wars.
I think that's awesome.
Yes.
And I'm excited. And I wish there was more Peggy Carter.
Somebody asked Kate Beckinsale, who was there promoting Underworld Blood Wars, the new Underworld movie. Remember the one that she didn't do?
I don't, actually. I just, it's all a blur.
She was
it's
like,
a blur of Underworld.
She was too good for Underworld. There's like five of them. And
yeah.
She didn't do one, and they had to tap dance around the fact that
she wasn't
Celine
in it.
Wasn't in it. Didn't her husband direct those things?
I think so.
Were they having a fight or something?
I don't know.
So anyway, she's back for the fifth one. And somebody asked her, hey, why don't they do a Blade Underworld crossover?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I can't talk about that.
Well, didn't she say that, like...
You know what that means?
What?
It means that Marvel has plans for Blade.
Right. Well, didn't she say that they had plans for Blade?
Well, I'm trying to present the story in a dramatic fashion.
Okay.
You want to just read the next bullet points
No.
that we've got for this segment?
No.
So Marvel has plans for Blade.
That's exciting. Snipes Blade or rebooting Blade?
He's staring at his telephone. He's like, some people never want to call me. Some people are always waiting by the phone. Some people are wearing ice skates while they're sitting by the phone.
Well, you even said not that long ago, like, how awesome would it be if we did another Blade movie with Wesley Snipes?
Old Wesley Snipes?
Yes, old Blade. I think it'd
be
amazing.
He's the Daywalker. He ages slower. Set in the future.
Yeah.
Set in future vampires, old Wesley Snipes.
Yes.
Get his Blade's granddaughter to play the new Blade like they were going to do in the comics and go with that.
Yeah, I think it'd be awesome.
Well, let's move on to another Marvel property that is not within the auspices of Disney. The Legion show, starring Dan Stevens, Matthew Crowley.
From Downton Abbey.
Very proper mutant.
Yes.
Playing the son of Professor X. They've added Jemaine Clement to the series. Jemaine Clement plays Jemaine in Flight of the Conchords and many, many other things. He was also in Taika Waititi's What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes.
I have to imagine he is going to appear in Thor Ragnarok. He has to.
Ooh. You
right?
think so? Why do you say that?
Because Taika Waititi is directing it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good point. I would not be surprised if he had a cameo.
Yeah.
I'm excited about this. This gives me kind of
what about
more hope for
against
the show?
Type? Against type.
Okay.
Wonder Man. What he keeps
it just makes me laugh because
he keeps the tortoiseshell
laugh.
Glasses, but we put smoked lenses in them, right?
Oh,
and
he's, yeah.
And even make him Australian. Or sorry.
Whoa.
A New Zealander still.
Yes.
And then he's just like, yes, I'm Wonder Man. You know, he's like, I've been in many movies.
He has a guitar.
And he's kind of like, yeah, right. He's kind of like a dorky, but still pulling it off, Wonder Man.
I freaking love that idea. I think that's amazing.
It's a new age. Kids in high water pants are drinking chunky beer. So we need new heroes.
I think you need to call Marvel right now and make this suggestion.
And supposedly this show, I think it's a good sign with casting Jemaine Clement, is going to keep the dark humor intact.
Good.
It's rumored to be based at least partially on the Legion series that was going on for a while. And Legion, you'd think, all right, the guy's a schizophrenic. Here's the pitch. He's the son of Professor X.
Yeah.
He is schizophrenic, or he has multiple personality disorder, or he has dissociative identity disorder.
Right.
One of which is something else, one of which doesn't exist, and one of which is the thing where you have supposedly have multiple personalities. Anyway, the point is, every personality has a different mutant power.
Oh. Okay.
So he's in a straitjacket, and it's crazy, and it's real like, oh boy, this is really intense and tough. No, have fun with it. Think of all the things you could do with that premise. He can travel through time.
Sure.
He can alter reality.
Yeah.
It looks like they're keeping that dark comic thing intact.
Okay, good.
You see a little bit of that. There was a trailer that came out a while ago, I think for San Diego Comic-Con. You see a little bit of that, but I think having Jemaine Clement in it is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
April from Parks and Rec, Aubrey Plaza in it too?
I think so.
So we've got we're setting the legs of the dark comic stool up here.
Which was kind of,
I remember. Dark comic stool. Talk to your doctor.
I remember when we were talking about her being cast, like it just seemed kind of odd, but yeah, I mean, if it's a dark comedy, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I think,
lots of brooding stares at the camera.
FX, not the best record in my opinion or Fox in general for TV,
sci-fi.
Yeah, sci-fi, but like comic people on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Basing that mostly on Constantine.
Mm-hmm.
Save it. Save it for the Constantine segment. Let's talk more DC animated stuff. There were some clips that were released of the Justice League Dark animated film at NYCC, so that is still rolling.
Okay.
Save it. But speaking of Constantine, Matt Ryan, who played Constantine on the NBC show,
mm-hmm.
Is voicing Constantine for that movie.
Okay.
And that's all I have to say about that.
All right. Any word on the live action Justice League Dark film?
No.
Okay.
No.
I
it's in Guillermo
sure.
del Toro's hope chest.
But he's kind of given up hope on it, though, hasn't he?
That's
like,
why it's in the hope chest. They've also said that a animated, or at least another animated Wonder Woman movie is, quote, on their radar.
Well, that's good. Trying to get more Wonder Woman stuff out there. That's always a good thing.
Wonder Woman will appear with some of the other Justice League members in the Justice League Dark film.
Oh, okay.
The animated film.
Sure.
I think the idea will be, we'll see the Justice League, you know, it's a flake out. It's like, oh no, so-and-so's attacking the planet. And so we see the satellite and it's like, well, we've got to stop them. And they get down there. It's like, whoa, magic. Superman's down. Wonder Woman has got a spell on her and the Flash doesn't know where he is. And oh, we need somebody darker.
Right.
To take care of this. Then cut to.
Yes.
Match. Lights up a cigarette. See the haggard face of John Constantine. Although less haggard now. He's got to be hot. He's hot. Funny thing about Constantine. Save it. Darn it. Is he aged in real time.
Yeah.
So he was introduced in, 1986. And he was like 35 then, and he aged in real time. So as the comics actually went on, he got older. And then he was like in his late 50s or something when it finally wrapped up.
Okay.
The artist didn't always remember to draw him his appropriate age.
Oh. Well, that's a bit of a problem.
But every, I think every like 50 or on the zero, the double zero, you know, like 150, 200 or whatever of his comic book, it would be a birthday issue.
Okay.
And so Constantine's friends that he had left, would throw him a birthday party. And, you know, a lot of Constantine is him. He's a man with a past, and he ruminates on that past. He's literally he's followed around by literal ghosts.
Yeah, he is. Absolutely.
We're giving it all away. One more note about a possible, although thwarted, comic book adaptation into film that has to do with Guillermo del Toro. Mm-hmm. Good lead-in, Cal. Thank you. Ron Perlman had said that Hellboy 3 is probably dead.
Is anybody surprised by this? Besides Ron Perlman.
No. It's sad because I don't like the Hellboy movies.
Okay.
I love Hellboy, or at least I used to love Hellboy. And I think that they did fine. I don't think that anybody can complain that they, you know, made watery wine out of water. They're well rated. People seem to like them, although they didn't make a ton of money. And sure. So you had your if Guillermo del Toro's moved on, it's time to move on.
Well, that's actually
the last
very
one came out in
point.
2008, and he's been the biggest booster for this film to get made, and he's been the only one.
Yeah,
pretty much. And so he said, sadly, it doesn't look like there's going to be any movement on that.
That's too bad.
Not really.
Okay. All right. Well, then maybe if
have
it's...
you seen them? Have you seen Hellboy?
I have not seen them.
Okay, so would you like to continue for 10 minutes?
No.
I know. I want to see what you do.
I know. I would not like to tap dance on something I don't know for 10 minutes.
I'm surprised it wasn't tap dancing in those movies. They're pretty goofy. You took the wrong part of Hellboy. That was not the right part of Hellboy. And they've got Frasier in them. Or sorry, they've got Niles in them.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's important. All right, let's talk comics before we get on to our comic book movie that we're talking about. Three comics. We're talking about Cage, Shade the Changing Girl, and Jessica Jones. And I will start. I'll talk about Cage. Cage is a comic book about Luke Cage, set in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Conceived of and begun drawing in the 70s.
Yeah.
Not that far back. But yeah, it was started in 2008 or so, conceived by Gennady Tartakovsky. The idea is that this is... kind of. Okay, so here's the problem. I don't think it's mature readers, but it's T+.
Okay.
But everything else about this book is like a kid's book.
Sure.
It's very cartoony. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, the art style is very cartoony.
Right.
But the action, the consequences of what's going on, but then they throw like a couple dams and hells in, and suddenly you got a book for adults. And I wonder why they didn't just make it a kid's book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's no point in hooking kids into liking Luke Cage, a character who... has a baby out of wedlock.
Sweet Christmas.
And he's almost invariably involved with very complicated plots about racism. And, like, there's nothing for a kid to hold on to.
No, not a whole lot.
So, kids, check out Cage. In this first issue, Cage is... it's very wacky and it's very slight. And it's technically... it's set in the 70s, as far as I can understand.
Sure.
With no... it's not in continuity. Cage is in full lapels, tiara. And to give you an example of the tone of the book, he foils a bank robbery at the beginning by these guys who are like on roller skates in like disco pants, and they're called the Bank Rollers.
That all checks out.
And so he punches them all. He punches one and he goes like, hoo, 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 like over a skyscraper. And
with so that sound effect.
That's what the goofy yelling. That's what we're dealing with here. And he goes to get his date with Misty Knight, mm-hmm. which, like I said, is not real. They dated for like 2 weeks after she and Danny broke up. And it's like, dude.
Why? Don't do that. Bros before hoes.
Because they're heroes for hire. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. But anyway, don't call her ho. Anyway,
I was just repeating the saying.
Yes. So she's not there. He can't find anybody, any superheroes in the city. He seems to be the only one there. And he's attacked by pretty much all of his foes at once. Like the ex is there. All of his crappy foes. Diamondback is there. Black Mariah is there. And he's trying to figure out, you know, what's happening. And he fights them and he kind of gets away. And he's going to go try to track down somebody that's going to help him. And then he's punched out by somebody we don't see. And the dialogue is like, who could punch out Luke Cage? Find out in the next issue. And that's the end.
It's like...
It's a
horrible ending.
That's a bad tease.
Like...
This is the only compliment I'll ever give Brian K. Vaughan. Turn the page. Oh my God! It's the Juggernaut or something. Right. Ooh, I gotta come back for that Juggernaut.
Right.
Like, unless your reveal is gonna totally suck. Like it's Forbush Man or something like that. Why not let us know?
Or Calendar Man.
Well, that would be fascinating since he's from another universe. So to me, it feels like he's just kind of screwing around, Tartakovsky. Also, maybe he kind of intended this, or he's just drawing this as, instead of like four, it's a four issue limited series or miniseries.
Sure.
Instead of four issues, it's like 152 or 60 page, you know, issue of just screwing around.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
It's not fun. But there's a problem. And I've heard this. There hasn't been a huge outcry, but I've heard this from other sites, specifically Black Nerds Matter, I think they're called, which is like, wow, all right, plant your flag. Go, girls, boys. They find some of the depictions and drawings problematic.
Okay.
Tartakovsky is a white Russian.
Yep.
Do you have to use so much curse words? he's a Russian immigrant, but he's basically grew up in America. So I'm not casting any aspersions on his intentions.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that he could like go, oh, I'm going to draw. What's wrong with the spirit's friend who drove the cab? Like, what's wrong with that depiction? He'd be like, dude, there is a cultural baggage that comes with drawing certain people certain ways.
Absolutely.
He's doing a caricature of Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's. He's like, well, I didn't hear what?
Oh my goodness. Stop.
Dos Vidania. So that's what I think was going on. I didn't see anything particularly like offensive. It's not like he's drawing, you know, just totally racist caricatures of black people. The whole cast is black for the most part.
Well, that's good.
I think he's just kind of doing cartoony sort of variations on people. Like Kyle Baker is black. He doesn't get any shit when he draws like a caricature of like a black character that might have some aspects that you go, is that what we want to do?
Right.
But then we applaud Salvador La Roca or something. Well, actually, his black people probably look like black people because he traces them. But, you know, if Chris Samney just draws, you know, Mr. Terrific and he looks the same as Superman, only palette swapped,
mm-hmm.
we don't say boo.
Right.
So I would err on the side of like trusting Tartakovsky
that
in this case. But I think your own mileage
bad.
Might vary.
Okay.
I think if you object to it, you've probably got grounds to stand on.
Okay.
Do I recommend the book?
Do you recommend the book?
If you've got an extra $3.99, and it's $3.99, and you want to try something else, something out, you like Luke Cage, go for it. But at this point, we'll have to wait and see.
Okay.
Not a must buy.
All right. Would you borrow it?
Don't. We can't take.
Okay.
Can't take trade secrets thing. Actually, we've been off for a while. We could probably do that. Yeah, if it's open on the bus, the person next to you is reading it, look over their shoulder.
There you go.
What'd you read?
I read Shade the Changing Girl. It's from the new DC imprint, Young Animal. It's written by Cecil Castellucci, who wrote the Plain Janes, Moving Target, and Moving Target, a Princess Leia adventure, and drawn by Marley Zarcone, who did Effigy.
Okay.
And overseen by Jared Way, who's overseeing all of the Young Animal imprint, and Jared Way of the lead singer of My Chemical Romance.
Yeah.
This
is not his first foray into comics.
No.
He wrote The Umbrella Academy previously.
Yes, exactly. And the whole idea behind the Young Animal imprint is it's just supposed to be weird stuff and kind of like... I read it described as kind of like a somewhat Vertigo-esque.
Right.
But like edgy. You know?
Like Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye is one of the titles.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what?
Right.
Yeah, I was surprised too because I thought Young Animal, ooh, young readers. No, mature readers.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you because I was going to say that. I think it is a bad name because I was like, wait a minute, Young Animals, and I'm like reading this book, and I'm like, there's a lot of mature stuff in this book.
Yeah, but the funny thing is doesn't it has to do with like teenagers?
Yes.
So it seems like it'd be like a maybe Gotham Academy type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's well, actually, I mean, can you comment on it? Like, would you let a kid read it?
No.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely not. And I've read Gotham Academy, and I would let a kid read that for sure. And I think Gotham Academy is entertaining in its own way. But this has a lot of elements that are mature.
Well, tell us about the elements. Get into it.
Okay, so it's about an alien named Loma, who is from the planet Meta, and she looks like a bird. And she...
Whoa. Back up.
Yeah.
The planet Meta.
It is a planet out in space. I don't know much about it besides it's the home planet of Rackshade.
So does this connect back to the original Rackshade?
A little bit. Yes. She steals Rackshade's madness coat or coat of madness.
Wait, we can't just let people.
What?
People are going to go mad if you don't give the whole backstory.
Well, okay.
I'll do it in 90 seconds.
Okay.
Less. I'll do it in 60 seconds. Start
All right, do it.
Steve Ditko created a character called Shade the Changing Man. He was from a planet named Meta, or like the Meta Zone,
mm-hmm.
and another dimension. And he was accused of a crime he didn't commit. He has this vest called the M-Vest that has all these crazy powers and allows him to change his appearance. And also is connected to his mental state. Yada, yada, yada. Forget all that. It didn't really go. It was only around for a couple issues. And so Peter Milligan, good Peter Milligan, back in the early days of Vertigo, created one of the first Vertigo books called Shade the Changing Man, which is an update of that concept. Rackshade comes to our planet to find a cure for the plague of madness in his world on Meta. The M-Vest is now the Madness Vest, and it has powers that it draws on the power of madness, and it reacts to his mental state and to people that he comes across. And it was like Milligan's chance to explore social issues like a lot of those early Vertigo comics did.
Mm-hmm.
That went on for a while until it petered out because Peter Milligan, through the power of the M-Vest, became bad Peter Milligan like he is now. And so they didn't do anything with him until he was in Justice League Dark, actually, by bad Peter Milligan in the New 52. And that's pretty much it. The character kind of disappeared after that.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty good.
Okay.
I got to say, I don't really remember him from Justice League Dark. So that's how...
Nice.
Lasting of an effect he had on me. Anyways, so she, Loma steals Shade's madness coat and she travels to Earth. She takes over Earth Girl Megan Boyer's body. Megan was in a coma for like the last 5 months and she like pushes out the last little bit of her and like just kind of fits herself in this teenage girl's body.
Okay.
And her... Megan's parents were told that she was brain dead, so they're like really surprised and they're not exactly sure how, because they're already going through the emotions of losing their daughter. But Loma,
how do they react to her coming back to life supposedly?
As it turns out, Megan Boyer was a bully and her quote unquote friends are not happy that she's alive, and her parents aren't really either because she terrorizes everybody.
Is it set? Oh, it's like a Mean Girl thing?
Yeah.
So it's like set in high school?
It's set in high school.
Okay.
So Loma is under the impression that life on Earth is going to be a breeze. And she's come here because she owes people a lot of money and she's trying to escape her own problems.
Or like Flibberty Gibbets or something.
Right.
Because Meta's really weird.
Yeah.
I know that guy, it's like Rick and Morty. I always thought of Meta as being kind of like any planet in Rick and Morty where they go to. It's like,
yeah,
you got
absolutely.
The schloopty gloops? You're always asking me for schloopty gloops. And it's like a faucet talking to like a giant like green blob or something like
right,
that.
Right, right. Absolutely. And so she's like trying to escape her reality. And then little does she know, she is about to find out how difficult it is to be a teenage girl.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a solid premise.
It is a solid
the premise. Promise of comedy.
And then also... people on Meta have discovered that the Madness Coat has disappeared and they're going to start looking for it.
Right.
So they're probably going to find Loma eventually.
How does the Madness Coat like manifest? Because one of the things that would happen in the original series was that there it would just sort of, it was both a weirdness factor
yeah.
amplifier and it was also like a story facilitator because Chris Bacalo or Bacalo... I apologize. I don't know. Let's say Bacalo.
Okay.
Cut his teeth on that book. Like, that was one of the first books that he really was the main guy on.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this weird, loopy, sort of flowing style. And so weird things would be in the corners of the panels. And you never knew if, like, it was real or not. Like, you were crazy or it was actually warping reality. And then sometimes they just need to get somewhere. And the Madness Vest would just take them there because, you know, story.
Storytelling.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
I think it definitely is a weirdness factor for sure. There's a lot of weird stuff in this book also that you're not sure is actually happening or if it's just Loma imagining it. Something else that I think is kind of... I like the overall style of the book and the art. That's one of my favorite things about it. It's very colorful and vibrant and it depicts the madness and craziness really well. But I think it's... not always easily distinguishable between what's really happening and what Loma is just experiencing. And
but that's the point.
I know
that's
it is.
The madness.
And but part of the craziness that she has to deal with is that she also needs to control the madness of this Madness Coat because otherwise it'll consume her.
Right.
And she doesn't have a lot of practice doing that. So you're kind of worried about her. She's like, I'll just stay long enough on Earth to get an idea of what this life is like. And then I'll go somewhere else. Yeah, okay. How do you know it's going to be that easy?
Right.
And
you got a test on Monday.
Yeah, exactly. So sometimes I think that the story jumps a little bit too all over the place. And it's a little bit hard to follow.
Uh-huh.
That
well,
would be
that's
my...
not... if the original Shade series is any indication, that's not getting any better.
Well, that's my main criticism of the book.
Okay. Recommend?
If you are a fan of Shade the Changing Man, I would recommend it. If you want to read something new and different, if you like colorful comic books that are kind of weird and out there, I would recommend it.
All comic books are colorful these days.
Well, this is super colorful.
Whoa.
I okay. mean, she, at one point, it's like this... this actually really well, I think, depicts the comic. She, like, at one point, after she gets back home, or to... Megan's home, she like throws up like what is the Madness Coat onto her bedspread.
That's why I love that stuff.
I mean,
I'm gonna read this.
That's just like, yeah, I mean it's a unicorn throwing up a rainbow. That's what this book is.
Guy who hasn't read it says 4 stars.
Yeah.
I will definitely read this. Okay, yeah, that sounds great. I say check it out.
Okay.
And you say check it out.
I say see how it goes.
Can't see how it goes if you don't check it out.
Check it out. Tentatively keep coming back. That's what I say.
Sounds good. One more book to talk about. We're talking about Jessica Jones, number one, The Return of Jessica Jones to her own solo title from the people who made her famous, Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Gatos. The two Mikes.
Yes.
They're not called. And it picks up immediate distress. The way it was it.
Yeah, I know, right? I know. I did it to myself.
Immediate distress.
Stop.
Where Jessica is being released from prison, from a super prison, the cellar.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going on. We don't know she's there. They don't tell us. And she returns home, and she's like, God, I just want to get back to PIing. All right, where you been? And so she takes on a case, and while she's taking on this case, she spends a lot of time dodging people who are coming after her to beat her up and asking where the baby is.
Yeah.
Misty Knight comes to beat her up. Jessica Drew comes to beat her up.
Mm-hmm.
And spoilers, at the end of the book, Luke Cage comes to beat her up and says, where's our daughter? She's, of course, married to Luke Cage. They had a daughter named Danielle, I don't know, probably like 10, 15 years ago, like in actual time, but still a baby in our time, named after Danny Rand. And So there's a problem there. We know that in the Sanford Green, David Walker, Power Man, Iron Fist book, Cage and Jessica are together and Danielle's around. But somehow this book either takes place, I'm guessing, in maybe another reality or timeline.
Okay.
Or something like that.
Sure.
Where something has happened to the baby. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it just takes place in the future. We don't know.
Okay.
But otherwise, there you go. She takes on a case which strengthens my theory about the other timelines, where she's talking to a lady who says that her husband, she's like, what, is she cheating? Or he's like, no, no, no. Right. He thinks that I'm not his wife. He thinks that he had like another wife and kids. And he keeps talking about, you know, other worlds and things like that. And there's nothing explicit, but they seem to say things that make you feel like maybe this isn't the right world. Like she brings up Peter Parker casually.
Yeah.
But and she says that he was in the news. Now, I don't know if that means that Peter Parker as head of whatever corporation Peter Parker runs now like that, or if it's right. because she knows that he's Spider-Man. Because
right.
they kind of have a question too about like superheroes and if they're connected, he's connected to superheroes and stuff. So we don't really know.
Well, and from what this woman says too, it's insinuated that her husband thinks that he is married to Gwen Stacy.
Right.
Because he said she was married to a blonde woman.
Well, a blonde woman named Gwen.
Named
he
Gwen.
Didn't say Stacy, but that's all I know. Did she have a black headband? That's what I need to know.
Well, he said a blonde woman named Gwen, and he said Peter Parker is a liar. So
Yeah. That's
what leads me to believe it's Gwen Stacy.
Yep.
So...
So Bendis has done this before when he, I guess the Spider-Woman solo series was actual Spider-Woman, but he introduced Spider-Woman into Avengers, made her like the premier character of the book, and then revealed that she was Bernanke, Michael Haneke, can't remember the Skrull Queen's name, but she was the Skrull Queen.
Oh my gosh.
Queen. So the character that everybody had loved and followed for 5 years was a Skrull.
Now, that's
what you do with Skrulls, but... Boy, was everybody mad about that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And so if he's bringing Jessica Jones back just to have her be, like, not prime Jessica Jones, I don't know. I'm a little mad.
You think that she's going to be a Skrull?
Well, remember, we haven't really done any storytelling with these characters outside of Power Man Iron Fist, which I think is in questionable continuity at this point.
Okay.
No offense to Walker and Green. You know, it's a fun book, but it is kind of a heightened reality.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure that the events that are happening there are actual real events.
Right.
Nothing's been done since the pizzas slapped together and we did Secret Wars. So maybe this is the new reality for the family. We don't know. But I will say one thing. Nothing has changed as far as the book goes.
Mm-hmm.
Not much has changed as far as this book goes. This is like slipping on an old shoe.
Yeah.
This is like Alias issue 29. Or more like Alias issue 59, as if we had come back from a long stretch. Like you left the book for a while and
right.
you pick up a new one. You're like, what's going on now?
I have no idea what's going
on. But otherwise, like the dialogue, the all the characters talking in the same voice because it's Bendis, the art, everything is like we never left.
Yeah. No, I really enjoyed it. It has a similar tone to the original series as well. The cover art, this is just my opinion. I felt like the cover
David Mack.
Yeah, but I thought the cover art kind of looks like Jessica, like Kristen Ritter Jessica
from the
TV show.
And the series is called Jessica Jones, so make
right.
of that what you will.
But the art on the inside is the Jessica that we know and love from Alias.
Yep, and David Mack probably traced a picture of Jessica, Kristen Ritter. So.
Probably. But I do have a lot of questions. Like, I think that that's like a good thing. I like that we don't really know what's going on, and I think it'll unfold a lot as it goes. And I think it's great with Jessica Jones, who's a PI who solves mysteries herself, to be have it start off as a mystery, and you don't know what's going on.
It is definitely a mystery. I have a question: if a motif in the series is her glass office door that says "Alias Investigations" getting broken, then how can Misty Knight, who has got a bionic arm, come and attack her, and they have a fight, and the door doesn't get broken?
I know, right?
The whole time I'm waiting for the window to get broken.
Yeah, no kidding. but, okay, I didn't know she had a bionic arm, but...
Yeah.
Seriously? So why didn't they do that in Luke Cage?
Because it's a more, quote-unquote, real show. You know, it's street-level heroes. So they might have a situation... Again, I haven't finished the Cage series on Netflix yet, where there's a bomb and she loses her arm and there you go.
Yeah, that's true. But Jessica refers to her as the competition. So it's almost like insinuating that, I don't know where her relationship with Luke is.
They're like Nightwing restorations or whatever. They're the Daughters of the Dragon. They're a kind of compete. They're girl heroes for hire.
Yeah. Yeah. So is Misty Knight a superhero then, like considered to be? Is she a cop in the comics?
I don't think she's a cop anymore. I think she stopped being a cop when her arm got blown off, but she became a PI with Colleen Wing.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Totally understand now. Makes sense.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. It's pretty great. I will say one thing, though. There isn't a lot of, like, flash. Not only does it feel like a issue of the ongoing series Alias, but it feels that way. It doesn't feel like a first issue to me. I'm not saying I need a lot of, like, pizzazz, but you think about the That's first true. Issue of Alias. She throws the guy through the window. She has sex with Luke Cage. She finds out Captain America's secret identity.
Like, yeah.
There are a lot of, like, oh boy, where the stakes very is high.
Yeah.
De La Soul. And in this, it's just kind of like, okay. She gets immediately, we have this crazy circumstance where she is, you know, flying away from the super prison, but we want to keep all that secret. And then she immediately takes a case. It's not like she's putting her life back together, like, bam, it's case immediately.
Well, her life is still a mess, though.
Oh, no, it's a mess. And Jessica Jones's life has always been a mess. But she's not even wallowing in it. Like, it just gets right to a case. Like, they're doing that thing, and I'm not sure it's that thing yet, where they're holding back information from us that maybe we should just have. And it's not... Of course it's a surprise. You held it back. It's not like she's figuring out a mystery.
Right.
You are just starving the audience for information in order to create tension, and that's like kind of sloppy and hacky.
I get what you're saying.
Calling that down just yet, but it could be better. Still, I mean, if you were a fan, you gotta read it.
I love it.
Here's my recommendation.
Yeah.
Go buy Alias.
That's fair.
The trades are available.
That's absolutely
read
fair.
Alias. That's my recommendation.
I am a little bit worried though, just one thing real quick, that everybody is asking her where her daughter is and why was she in jail? And why does Luke send two other people before he goes and approaches her himself?
Drama.
I've never known him to be a coward, and that bothers me.
But you've never had to deal with an ex-wife before.
Oh, come on. Luke Cage can deal with whatever. And Jessica
His skin
gives
is
him...
unbreakable, but not his heart.
Oh, stop it. Once again, my friend. Long Island.
What's up, shit?
What's up, shit?
What you doing?
Long Island.
Long Island.
What's the matter, me?
Once again, Long Island.
All right, finally, I don't have to save it anymore. We're going to talk about Constantine.
I know.
It's our craft to services segment. We talk about a film that is not well-loved by critics, but I think a lot of fans would go, I remember that was pretty good.
Yeah.
We got to get a better description for this segment.
Something more succinct and sounds flashier.
Well, I think people understand that feeling, though, to think like, oh, I thought that was great, and then Roger Ebert... Or whoever his clones are now, the Ebert army, come out and go, no, it's bad, and I'm going to explain why. We're not going to try to explain why. Well, maybe a little bit.
Well,
but we're going to explain mostly why we enjoy it. We're going to talk about Constantine today from 2005. It has a score of 46 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a borderline one.
Yeah.
Although not if you consider the fact that like 60 and below is an F.
Good point.
If you are going to school.
Yes. So you would be getting an F minus.
Right.
If you had a 46%.
Right click. Yeah, exactly. Or it might be moving down or up the alphabet a little bit into like H or something.
Yeah, maybe.
It stars Keanu Reeves as John Constantine, a demon hunter and occultist, and starred a lot of fans getting really angry about the fact that he would not be blonde and British.
Yeah. Which really I don't think is necessarily... detrimental to the character.
Oh, really, fool? Well, let me explain why.
Okay.
Mansplaining on.
Whoa.
Do you have an opinion? I mean, you've been reading, we're doing Constantine Hellblazer for Comic Book Club in a few days. Do you have an opinion on?
Look, I think Constantine can be British.
Because he's supposed to be Sting.
I know. He's modeled after Sting.
Right.
And he's supposed to be kind of like this, I mean, he's a dark and brooding character who smokes a lot. But...
You know, Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Rooting on that park bench.
Just being so sad and emo. I think Keanu does a good job at portraying the character. And you know what? Once they cast him, I'm so glad they didn't dye his hair blonde and make him do a British accent.
Yeah, they went all the way. They went all the way. I remember when this was announced before 2005 that it would be a movie, and I thought immediately they're going to bring it to LA. They're not going to be able to resist the City of Angels.
Yep, and that's what they did.
This movie is about angels and demons and about dealing with, you know, the afterlife and the occult.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. And yeah, they shortened his trench coat, and he's American instead of British, and he's black haired instead of blonde. And I think he kind of nails it.
I think he does too.
If you consider those things to be inimical to the character, it's not going to work out for you.
No.
But if you're willing to be a little more open and take like Donald Glover playing Spider-Man, oh yeah, I went racial on it. There's different kinds of white races too.
Yeah.
And you just accept that, I think he does okay. And this is a guy who, I mean, this is Keanu Reeves we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Not known for his incredible range as an actor.
No.
And I don't think that it hampers him that much in this film. But we'll get to that. So yeah, the setup is that John Constantine is... We don't really know. We know that he is a weird guy.
Yes.
He is, over the course of the movie, we come to find out that he is like a demon hunter, mm-hmm. and like a cult investigator. And he has got a bad attitude and he smokes all the time. But he's got a good heart, I think we can pretty much assume.
Yeah, more
and
or less.
And he is helped by a sort of weird crew of characters that he's picked up to do what he does, which is send demons back to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets some bad news in the form of the fact that he has lung cancer,
mm-hmm.
terminal lung cancer, which isn't a surprise because he's smoked 2 packs a day since he was 15.
Yes.
And he bitterly appreciates the irony of somebody who has survived demons and hell itself and is going to be taken out by Philip Morris.
Uh-huh.
The biggest demon of them all. Truth.org. Truth.org. Actually, I think don't go to truth.org. That's probably a 9/11 site. But anyway. Welcome to Crazy Town. And so he sets off to find a way to save his life and yes. ultimately his soul. Because as we find out in the film, he was distraught as a teenager. He committed suicide. And since God in this film goes by strict Catholic rules,
yeah,
his soul is, no matter how much good he does, no matter how many demons he destroys, his soul is bound for hell because he took his own life.
Mm-hmm.
I'd argue he didn't actually die, so...
Right, but didn't
Lucifer... He kind of kept the receipt on that one, right?
Did Lucifer, like, send him back to collect souls for him?
Or no.
What's... How did he get back? Did he just not die, technically?
Yeah, I don't...
Okay. It's a little shady.
He says he was dead for 2 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, but then he's like, two minutes in hell. We see hell in the film, and we'll get to it, but like, 2 minutes in hell is like a lifetime. Dude. He's really good. There's very few dudes in this.
There are very few.
And so he is basically at his lowest. He's suffering from this thing, but he meets a woman played by Rachel Weisz.
Yes.
Rachel Weisz.
I think we'll go with Weisz.
And this is a movie from the 2000s, so it was federally mandated that she would be in it.
Mm-hmm.
She's in a lot of movies in the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Who plays Angela Dodson, who is a police detective, whose sister, twin sister, unfortunately, a twin sister. Sorry, yes. I have to do that. unfortunately, has just killed herself. She was in a mental institution.
Yes.
And... she meets Constantine and they find out that maybe it's not quite what it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And off we go.
Yeah.
We always spoil stuff, right?
Yeah, of course we
do. I'm not
going to
give you like a whole plot synopsis, but that's kind of the start for me. Constantine, how familiar were you with this movie?
I'd seen it once before.
Uh-huh.
So not super familiar, but not a newbie. How familiar were you with this movie?
Extremely, extremely familiar.
Yeah.
I remember when this movie came out. I am a huge Hellblazer fan, and I've read the entire series, even up to the bitter end, after Peter Milligan had washed his hands of the murder that he committed to that character in his world.
You are a diehard fan.
Him. But yeah, I'm very familiar, and so I was one of those guys that was like, no, it's gonna be not British. But then I settled
really
down
upset.
Immediately because I was like, look, if you wanna... And also, Keanu, not sure the right guy. I don't think we understood... fully the power of Keanu means cool breeze in Hawaiian.
Sure does.
But what I mean by that is like his ability to just be a perfect avatar for the audience.
Absolutely.
But this is going to require him to do something that he doesn't usually do, which is be extremely like bitter.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And like be be somebody who is not the everything's cool and whoa and
right.
What, I'm the chosen one. What?
Right. I know kung fu.
Yeah, exactly. I think the more Keanu tries to act, like the more in trouble he gets sometimes.
Yes,
and
I would
so
agree.
You'd think, okay, so dude that's one with the universe, he's playing with Dog Star, eating sandwiches,
mm-hmm.
contemplating life. How is he going to play like the most cynical, not Englishman, but
right.
cynical dude who has seen literally hell? Like he's seen
yes.
the worst things that anybody can see. And he kind of pulls it off.
I think he totally pulls it off.
But here's what I mean by that. I think he pulls it off by kind of not pulling it off.
Okay.
Because in this version of Constantine, and Constantine in the comics is very, we want to believe that he's got a good heart. But
yes.
also he, and Keanu Reeves' Constantine does this too. He will do anything. He's the ultimate like objector.
Yeah.
He doesn't. There's no, they added this whole like, oh, I'm killing demons so I can try to buy my way back into heaven.
Yes.
That's not in the comic. In the comic, he hates both heaven and hell because he hates control and he doesn't want to be controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would just as soon try to off an angel as he would a devil because
okay.
he just is the ultimate anarchist. He doesn't want anybody to control him. And so that character, that's an interesting thing to take. In fact, that's, that's kind of Satan's thing too.
Yes.
If you don't think of being Satan as being pure evil, like Lucifer in Mike Carey's book, where he's just the ultimate anti-hero. He's the guy who doesn't, it's not about being evil and like, nah. He just doesn't want to do what God tells him to do because it's like, I don't want you to tell me what to do. You made
yes.
me, I'm your creation, I have free will, let me exercise my free will.
Or like in Neil Gaiman's Sandman, Lucifer in that.
Yeah, well, that's where he comes from.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, there you go.
So that's a lot to put on Keanu's skinny shoulders to try to represent that sort of moral grayness and balance. And he doesn't. And that's fine. That's another change for the film. In the film, he is a good guy. He is just
yeah.
so jaded.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a good guy who is jaded, the cynicism is kind of a thing that he puts on. You know what I mean?
Yes.
John Constantine might just be half drunk and mad and totally just throw out a lady who just needs help because she's afraid that her sister's in hell.
Yeah.
Whereas this Constantine is like half drunk and he's like making the decision. He's like, I'm a bad guy. Like, I'm not worth anything.
Yeah.
And so I'm
don't
not going to help you because that's
me.
What, yeah, get away from me.
Yeah.
Which is a more Hollywood thing than a Vertigo comic book created by Alan Moore and Jamie Delano and Garth Ennis and Peter Milligan. And, and I think it works for this version of the character because every time he's like, God, I can't believe it. He's kind of like a snotty kid.
Yeah.
Like a teenager who's acting. You're like, come on, kid. Why are you being like that?
I know.
But when you think, I don't know. I'm just like, Keanu can just pull. He can't do anything wrong in my mind.
He's so.
Especially when he's a cat.
He's he's so dang charming. It's like, it's hard. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, he totally pulls it off. There are a
and
couple.
And he gets some good lines in this.
Yeah, he does.
That's the whole John Constantine wit and the fact that he can laugh in the face of death and his whole thing. I think he's called, like, one of his names is, like, the laughing magician in the comic book.
Okay.
But he gets some good hits in, and because you have to, this movie is, we talk about movies as being badly paced, and it's often, like, a detraction.
Yeah.
This movie is, like, crazily paced. Like, it's an asymptotic level of building action
mm-hmm.
until the last act is just boom, boom, boom. You get hit in one thing after the other. And this guy. And no, it's this guy. And this guy shows up. And this guy shows up. And then the devil shows up. And you're
and
like,
you're just
what?
Like, what?
And then
is
God
happening?
Shows up. Yeah. And you have to, the script is well written by two guys you've never heard of and will never hear of again. I don't know where this script came from. It's directed by Francis Lawrence, whose biggest claim to fame is directing the last three Hunger Games films.
Right.
And he directs it in such a way that he's really doing a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really seen the Hunger Games films. I doubt that he works half as hard, maybe you can confirm, half as hard as he does in this film. There are a lot of aerial shots,
mm-hmm.
clearly to establish the God's
angels
eye view.
And God's
yeah,
eye
like
view.
The
yeah.
dispassionate, you know, God is staying out of this one.
Mm-hmm.
Because God and the devil or heaven and hell have a deal in this world, which is that it's called the balance, where they won't intervene.
Yes.
There are some people who are like, I assume, like possessed
mm-hmm.
by angels or demonic spirits. that he calls half-breeds.
Yes.
Who sort of peddle influence and kind of like maintain a sort of presence in the world. Mm-hmm. But nobody is, like, angels can't come directly to Earth. Neither can demons. They can't fight openly.
Right.
But, of course, they break those rules sometimes.
Yes.
And so the devil and demons are always, are depicted as always trying to get around this or just blatantly breaking it if you're Mr. Stefani.
Yeah, Gavin Rossdale. Yeah, it's Balthazar.
Yeah, or and then God is depicted as a, you know, it's like a very deist sort of thing. Like he's the absent watchmaker. He's just removed.
Yes.
You know, and far away from us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Constantine's doing what he has to.
Yeah. And like so much so that like he prays at one point to God. And
you're cutting way to the end.
I know. But it's such a good example of what you're talking about.
I'll remind you. We'll talk about
it. Okay. All right.
So we should get into the plot. I mean, I think a little bit. Or just talk about individual things like we do.
Okay.
I think the opening sequence is great.
Yeah.
It is so weird. And it establishes immediately that this is not going to be, you know, I inferno a ghost or whatever.
Mm-mm.
Or the power of Christ compels you. Like, we don't know what's happening. It opens on, you know, okay, first of all, the opening sequence.
Yeah.
It opens in Mexico. Where a homeless Mexican guy finds the Spear of Destiny. What?
Wrapped in a Nazi flag.
Yes. Clumsy device, the Spear of Destiny.
Yeah.
But, you know, what are you going to do? I think this movie doesn't talk down to its audience. And I think that that hurt it because without aggressively, relentlessly explaining things, which this movie does a lot of info dumps about demons and stuff, but it doesn't set up other stuff. It just expects that you know you're a nerd, you know what the Spear of Destiny is. Boom, let's go.
I have no idea what the Spear
of
Destiny is.
But you didn't know, yeah.
No. And I was like, why World War II?
Yeah.
Why Mexico?
Well, and I'm going to respect my audience, and I'm not going to explain the Spear of Destiny.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, this guy gets his hands on the Spear of Destiny. We know it's the Spear of Destiny because an opening title card said that. Uh-oh, bad movie sign.
Yeah.
but it's not that bad. And then we cut to Los Angeles, and a young girl is possessed by a demon. She's crawling on the ceiling.
Yeah, that's
and in,
bad.
In comes John Constantine in a great series of sort of aerial sort of shots, like from this passionate remove. He also likes framing things a lot. He loves his like geometric things. I guess it doesn't take a lot of skill to set that up necessarily as a director, but I think it really, when you think about like Hieronymus Bosch and you think about like art, like Renaissance art and the depictions of the devil and angels and stuff like that, it reminds me of that. It's sort of like a artistic sort of
absolutely that
tableau
square,
yeah,
like
a tableau type
and
thing.
It's like it's really this huge shot.
Yeah, and there's a great sequence at the beginning where Constantine is called in to help this girl.
Yes,
and so he comes in. And we don't really see his face for a while. We just know that he's got this black coat on. He seems like a kind of weird guy. All the neighbors are there in the apartment. They've tied the girl to the bed, and they're all terrified. And he just kind of walks in, and he goes over. First of all, he lights a cigarette. He sets the cigarette down
on an end
table.
Yeah.
And then the rest of that scene, we get a shot from the door with the end table in focus. And we see it kind of burning down. It's sort of like a keeping time, I guess.
Yeah.
And he walks over to the window where the light is shining on the girl, and he takes out what looks like this keychain, and it's got all these different holy symbols on it.
Yep.
And he's kind of flipping through them, and the light goes through the holy symbols, you know, and sort of and the shadow rests on the girl. And he stops at one, and it burns, so she goes, ah! And he's like, okay, that's what we're dealing with here.
Yep.
He's like looking through the menu. That's so cool. So immediately we know he's knowledgeable, he's prepared, and he's dealt with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, this is an Aztec demon or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. And so he does this cool thing that honestly doesn't really make a lot of sense, but he traps it in a mirror and they throw the mirror out and it explodes. And so demon gone.
Yes.
But problem, because demons aren't supposed to be able to do what they were doing. Like this demon was literally trying to tear out of the girl's skin.
Right. And they're not supposed to take physical form on Earth.
So that sets him off. He knows that something is going on. Mm-hmm. He's got a couple of people that help him. He's got Beeman, who is the guy that works in the bowling alley that he lives above.
Yep.
And loves insects. So we could have worked a little harder on that,
on
I guess,
name.
But anyway, he's a kind of fun guy. He's also the guy that there's this great scene. It's like the Q scene in James Bond movies.
Yes.
Where he brings John all these little things that, of course, the gadgets he'll use in the rest of the film.
Right.
This film is super charming. I'm not sure why it didn't catch on.
I know.
I love it so much. I'll try to control myself. And so he gives him, like, some dragon's breath, which is like a flamethrower. And
he's like, I thought you couldn't find this anymore. And he's like, well, I know a guy.
He gives him ampules of holy water, you know, from the River Jordan. And it's this whole thing. It's definitely redolent of the comic in that there are artifacts and relics, things that like Indiana Jones would be like, it belongs in a museum. And John Constantine's like shoving it up a demon's ass, like, no, I need this to do my job. Shavings from the bullet that shot the Pope.
Yes.
Which I don't think ever come back.
No, maybe not.
I wanted to see something with that.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
But yeah, so he deals with this guy. He's also got his friend, who's played by Pruitt Taylor Vince.
Yes. Father Hennessy.
Hennessy, that's right. Mm-hmm. He likes to drink. Yeah. Could have worked a little harder on these names.
Yeah.
And he's a guy who, it's really sad what happens to him, because he's, so in this world, this is another layer that they add to it. Constantine is a psychic, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Psychics are important in this film and in this world. Not really in the comics, but in this. And John was born with the ability to see angels and demons, which is what kind of drove him crazy when he was a kid and led to his suicide attempt. So now he uses that ability, but there are other people who have similar abilities, and one of them is Father Hennessy. Father Hennessy is like a psychometric, essentially. He can hear voices, he can touch things and get impressions from them.
Yes.
And Constantine knows that something's wrong because this soldier demon, you know, was inside this girl, which shouldn't have happened. So he says, hey, you know, I need you to check the airwaves for me, or whatever he says.
Uh-huh.
And you get the idea that Hennessy doesn't like this. In fact, Hennessy might drink to keep the voices out. And he's got this amulet of protection that keeps the voices away. And he's like, give it to me. And he's like, oh, John, no, I need this. I need this. And Constantine's like, yeah, I'll give it back to you later. What a bastard.
I know.
And ultimately, his actions lead to that guy dying.
I know.
Because the demons know that he's onto their plan, and the guy from Bush kills him.
Yeah, I know. Gavin Rossdale just offs him. And then B-Man's next by bugs.
Yeah, B-Man dies too. And I think the one thing that the movie does well is that it populates the film with all these. You get the idea that Keanu, he's just Keanu.
Yeah.
Keanu Constantine, John Keanu-stantine. Whoa, almost broke my mouth there. You get the idea, he's been doing this for a while.
Yeah, absolutely.
He knows people. He goes and he sees Papa Midnight.
Yes.
A character played by Jimon Hounsou, who we've talked about on the show before, who doesn't...
He played Korath in Guardians of the Galaxy.
He doesn't get to do enough, I don't think.
No, he doesn't.
He plays a problematic character, a voodoo witch doctor, but he kind of owns it.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows him. Even the lady that he goes to, who's a doctor who tells him that he's got cancer, it isn't just like he checks into a clinic, oh, doc, I've been coughing.
Right.
You feel the history with that character. And we never learn her name.
No.
But you understand that John has been doing this for a while, and he's a guy who, like any good private eye or something, he's got to know, hey, Jimmy, what's the haps? He's got to know people.
Absolutely.
And I think they set that up well. What they don't set up well, in my opinion, is he does have a line about, I didn't know the ghost following me around. They don't quite sell the weight that these deaths, or that, you know, that being a friend of his is like a fatal disease, quite enough.
No.
That's a big thing.
They don't sell it.
I'm sure you've seen it in the comics. That's a big, but... I mean, he's literally followed around by ghosts.
Yeah.
That are like, thanks, John. Thanks for getting me killed. Pretty cool. Thanks. And then, of course, his last friend, which we couldn't help but mention, would be Chaz.
Played by Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm good.
Oh, okay. All right.
He's fine. Chaz is reinvented from John's age-old friend from childhood in the comics to scrappy kid who drives a taxi cab and wants to be a cool dude, Mr. Just like John Constantine. Yeah.
But he kind of, it's weird because Chaz is very much in the beginning of the movie. He's very much involved and is his car. And then Keanu hooks up with Angela Dodson, who's a cop who also has a car. So Chaz kind of disappears for a while and then reappears at the end of the movie. He's like, I'm not going to let you go to this big fight alone. And Papa Midnight's really impressed with him. He's like, you come back after this mission and, you know, we'll talk about a job.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, awesome. And then he dies.
I know.
Gabriel killed him.
And Papa Midnight prayed for him and everything.
I know. And that's didn't pray for Constantine.
Well, he did. But that's one of those great touches in the film, is that John is just, he's very bitter, but he's also just he's not impressed by everything. He's not touched by anything. He literally meets Satan and he's like, all right, great. And they're getting ready. It's after the big A-team scene where he puts his Holy Cross shotgun together.
I know.
It's kind of an eye roller if you like this. John Constantine has never, ever done that in the comics. But look, it's a movie. And they've got the holy water, and they've got they're all ready to go, and they're strapped up. And then Papa Midnight like prays for Chaz. He's like, "What are you doing? I'm praying for you." He's like, "Oh, okay, cool." And he turns around to Constantine. He's like, starts to pray, and Constantine's like, "Come on."
He's like, "I'm
just
good."
Leaves.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. That's one of those things that, you know, American or British, blonde-haired or black-haired, that's one of those points where it's like, all right, that's where
the
they cross. That's the negative 40 where Fahrenheit and Celsius cross. Like, you yes. got it right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about Rachel Weisz in this movie.
I think
she plays
good.
A dual role. She plays
yes.
Her distraught twin, and also she plays Angela Dodson.
Yes, and we find out both of which are psychic.
Yes, they are powerful psychics. This is part of the bad guy's plan in this film.
Yes.
That we find out that Mammon, who is the son of Satan.
Which I didn't know he had.
This movie has, that's not in the comics either. This movie has a lot of fun with sort of mirroring. There's a lot of mirrors in this film.
Yes.
And also, literally, there's a great shot, which is so easy when you think about it, with Rachel Weisz, where they're trying to solve the mystery of her sister's death.
Yes.
She was convinced that her sister would never, Isabel, would never kill herself. Because
she's a devout Catholic.
And that's a mortal sin.
Yes.
And they find out she did. She jumped off this roof. She killed herself. We don't know what her motives were, mm-hmm. but she did this on purpose. And so it's a bad lead up to a good scene. Constantine gets her in this room, and Constantine knows that they share this psychic ability. Isabel embraced her gift, and it kind of drove her
yes.
crazy, whereas denied hers, and it's kind of withered, and she doesn't really have it anymore. Although, as a cop, she wonders why she always knows
where
how to find the bad
are.
Guys, and she's never been shot, and she's always able to like kill the bad guys before they can kill her. And he takes her to Isabel's room in the hospital. And then they do this kind of clumsy thing where he kind of bullies her around. He's like, "What'd she think?" She's like, "I don't know. What'd you think?" I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right. But then she's distraught. She runs over to the window and she's thinking about, oh, wait, we did have a connection. And she raises her head and you see her reflection in the window. And it's like the
yes.
twins talking to each other,
mm-hmm.
which is like, I mean, it's been done a million times.
But it's well done.
Yeah,
and
it really works.
And then the effect that comes after that is she reveals to Constantine that they used to leave messages to each other.
That's
kind of
cheesy.
I know.
It was just a way to get her to the window.
I know.
For that shot.
Yeah.
It was worth it.
Yeah, it was totally worth it.
Yeah. So we find out that Isabel didn't, she did commit suicide, but it was for a reason, because Mammon, the son of Satan, wants to come to Earth.
Possess her.
Yes, and cause a lot of trouble. And if he can possess her, a powerful psychic, and then be born of that, which is to say, jump out.
Yeah.
Surprise!
Yeah.
He can then start, you know, the apocalypse, start a reign of hell on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so Isabel's dead. She killed herself to protect Earth. I think that's a sacrifice. She didn't get to go to heaven?
Apparently not.
Whatever.
I know.
God is not paying attention.
Nope.
Now, Mammon and his agents turn their focus to Angela, whose mm-hmm. psychic power is awakened by a near-death experience. A lot of water in this movie. Water is basically how you do spells and stuff in this film.
Yep.
You can just stick your feet in some water. Give me that cat. I'm in hell.
Constantine has this, he says when he has the cat, too, cats are great. They're half in, half out of hell. Apparently, all the time. Because they're good, but they're devilish.
Which is like the, okay, there are, this movie takes a couple shortcuts, but it takes a lot of long cuts as well, because this whole runner with Papa Midnight exists to fill out the story about the balance. And Papa Midnight is a guy who is also committed to maintaining the balance, although mm-hmm. he does it through. John Constantine is, D&D fans, are you ready? Is
yeah.
like active neutral. Like he physically acts to maintain. So if he sees lawful, he takes him down. If he sees chaotic, he takes him down.
Yeah.
Papa Midnight is true neutral in that he refuses to act.
Yes.
Although he used to be a crusader like John. And mm-hmm. so John has to eventually go back to him. And I think that all leads up to the, what I think is awesome scene where John finally gets fed up. Angela's been taken. It looks like Satan's plot's going to work out. And so he
yeah.
goes to Midnight's Club, which you have to be psychic to enter.
Yes.
It's a frog in a dress or something.
Yeah.
Rat in a dress. And he basically threatens Midnight, and then Midnight actually comes back at him with his powers, and it looks like John's in a lot of trouble.
Right.
But he talks Midnight into letting him use the chair. He keeps talking about the chair.
Uh-huh.
We find out that Midnight has this huge collection of arcane relics and
mm-hmm.
artifacts and holy items, and he's got this electric chair, which was the electric chair in Sing Sing for like decades.
Yeah.
That's not even like a shard of the true cross or something. Like, no. That is an artifact simply because so many evil souls went to hell from that place that it has power.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I can't remember anybody doing that in the comic, like, but I bet they're kicking themselves that they didn't.
Yeah.
And so they do this ritual where they basically, like, they don't say, like, you know, riding the synchronicity highway or anything like that, but they basically, John has to sort of have an out-of-body experience where he... And it's really convenient that he immediately goes right to the point.
I know.
The story point.
Yeah.
But it's cool because he goes to where this demon, at the beginning of the film, possesses the guy with the Spear of Destiny.
Yes.
And he's like sees him going along his path. And something you don't realize is that in those scenes at the beginning where we see this demon-possessed guy make his way from Mexico across the border to L.A., keeps turning around like something's behind him. He keeps looking around. And you're not sure if he's like furtive or he's just like worried.
Yeah.
You realize later on that's John's spirit or whatever form, spiritually, like being back in time, observing him. Because when we get up to the actual, maybe he's seeing in the future, because now the guy has made it here. Angela's been kidnapped. She's been brought to the hospital where this ritual is going to take place. And then the guy ends up there and he sees the guy. And then finally the guy turns around and grabs Constantine in the vision. And then Papa Midnight has to get him out.
Yes.
That's thinking.
That is thinking.
And in a great effect where... It's probably easy to do, but it's just John is in the spirit world and he's being thrown and he's like, help me. And then you see like Midnight's arms come in and he spins him out and then he's out. He's back with no cuts. He's just back in the relic room again.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't make a lot of films. It's probably easy to do, but visually I was like, that's so cool.
It's really cool. It's really well done. It's succinct storytelling and it's great. And then it like... You get to the climax of the film, and that's where the pacing just goes all to hell.
Oh yeah, so are we there?
I think
we're covered
there.
All the kind of major points.
Yeah.
Gavin Rossdale plays Balthazar, who is a demon or you know a demon possessed guy who claims to not really be involved, but of course he's going around killing all of John's friends. Angela, with her newly awakened psychic abilities, is able to help John figure out that it is Balthazar. John goes after him. It has this awesome scene where Balthazar's just a real jerk.
He's a smarmy businessman.
Yeah. Played to the hilt by Gavin Rossdale, who you get the feeling isn't really like afraid of John because he can be sent back to hell, like his body can be destroyed, but I assume that he can just come back at some point.
Right.
So there's no real stakes for him. There's no real threat to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he loves toying with John and they have this fight where he uses the holy brass knuckles, which are kind of cheesy. But eventually he kind of incapacitates him. And he's like, oh, what are you going to do? Send me back to hell. Woo, see you later. And he's like, nope, you go to the other place. And he starts to like read him the last rites.
Yes.
And he's like, well, you can't. You're not a priest. You can't read me the last rites. You don't have any authority. He's like, all right, we'll see. And he's threatening him with like saving his soul. Which is like this great inversion. Because he's like, oh, when a demon gets to heaven, that'll be a fun party.
Yeah.
And that's his like bracing. That's his interrogation technique.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, he tells him all the stuff. And then Constantine's like, you have to ask for forgiveness, you prick. It never would have worked. That's the gun was empty the whole time.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And that's another great moment that just shows that like Constantine, even though he has like guns and holy grenades and stuff in this, like it's all about outsmarting and being smarter than everybody.
Absolutely. And he definitely outsmarts and outwits a lot of the bad guys.
Yeah. Well, I think that brings us to the end.
Yeah. So it's revealed him and Chaz are trying to exorcise the demon, the Satan son, Mammon, from
Angela.
And this is where the pacing gets a little muddy.
Just start happening. Boom, 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 boom,
and,
boom.
And it's like they're trying to get her out, and it seems like maybe they got her out. And I was like thinking, wait a minute, that was easier than the girl in the beginning.
Right, roll
credits.
And I
was like, that can't be good. That can't be right. And then it wasn't right. It's not out yet. And they keep trying. And then they start praying together, like saying a prayer. And it kind of seems like it worked. And then something that you don't see comes and attacks Chaz.
He gets low-keyed.
Kills him. Yeah.
He just gets bashed to death.
And then you see...
And we take about, like you said, the pacing. We get about 3 or 4 seconds where it's like, that sucked. Yeah, sorry.
No.
Moving on.
And like, it's like he was like fridged, so Constantine can be like, all right, that's it.
Yeah.
And then Constantine uses the tattoos that are on his arms and he puts them together. And that's like a way for him to call an angel or a demon.
Well, okay.
Can't be seen.
This is another film that, and you can do this a lot. you know, when characters can just pull out. So I was thinking about Harry Potter a lot in this film.
And okay.
Harry Potter always has the right thing because it just shows up, or like a phoenix drops it off for him, or
yeah.
Oh, are you going to be the seeker in the big game tomorrow? Mm-hmm. Like all the teachers get together and buy him a Nimbus 2000 or whatever. And it's like, what? If everybody's helping you, you're not a hero. You're just the guy that we all chose to be the hero and to win this thing.
Right.
And I was afraid of a little bit of that, although we do get him taking the time to buy or to pick his sort of weapons and prepare himself, you know, with Beeman. We know that he uses his environment to his advantage.
Yes.
And so, yeah, there's this one thing where it's revealed that
Gabriel,
character we haven't even mentioned yet.
Yes, played by Gabriel Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton. David Bowie's ghost.
Yes. An androgynous angel.
Yes. Well, yeah. That was cool.
Yeah.
She's actually dressed like David Bowie from like the 80s when he meets her for the first time.
Yes.
But she's extremely powerful, and she's an archangel, and she wants to help Mammon come into this world because, in an interesting twist of philosophy, again, totally new, not in the comic book,
yep.
She's jealous.
Of humans.
Of humans, because they have grace. They have redemption mm-hmm. offered to them. You know, only for repentance they can go into heaven. And she thinks that they should have to work for their supper and mm-hmm. earn it. And so she's mm-hmm. going to bring hell to earth.
And then whoever, those who survive.
Whoever survives will be worthy of God's love.
Yes.
Wow. But anyway.
So she's decided she's God now.
She's decided that, you know, she's going to edit the script for God a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Punch it up, if you will.
Yeah.
But as far as the arm thing goes, I feel like they set it up. It's like a one-time use thing. The whole movie, he's got these tattoos on.
Yes.
We don't know what they are.
Right.
And then he's fighting this force that is invisible, is super strong, immortal. Once she starts messing with him, it's clear that even her touch is sort of doing something to him.
Yes.
And so he can't beat this foe.
Mm-mm.
And she's invisible, which sucks. So they've got this one thing where it's very hard for him to cast this spell. It just moves the story forward, and so he can make her appear. And she even like goes, wow, you're so arrogant. You think that you can just tell an angel what to do. Like, she even turns it back on him. So I'm cool with it. It's fine.
No, I'm cool with it, too. Yeah. And it clearly takes a lot of energy out of him to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
And she explains the whole thing to him. And he,
right.
He, like, even her whole he's evil a little plan. Surprised that she's, why are you helping this guy? And she's like, oh, it's just part of the great work. He's like, what's the line? He's like, murder and destruction and damnation. Call me provincial, but I think that this is a little too far. But yeah, that's her plan. And because she's an angel, screw you, she just kind of lightly blows, and John is completely thrown out of the room and smashes into the doors, the glass doors in the next room. Doors are sealed. Her plan is she's got the Spear of Destiny. She's going to use it to cut, you know, open Angela, free Mammon, and it's bad news for everybody.
One thing real quick. I don't know if you noticed this or not, but Gabriel is wearing a bunch of medical bracelets on their arms. And I noticed watching this that they say emotions on them.
Yep.
The only two that I noticed were joy and sorrow. But I think every single one of them has an emotion.
Yep. It's like a Silent Hill costume or something like that.
Yeah.
Somebody got the note costume, but effed up. Okay. Or hospital. Yeah, we can do this.
Yeah. It kind of looks like she ripped out of like a psychic jacket or something like that.
Yeah. Her leg things, I don't even know what you call them. They're not spats, but the things on her legs are straitjackets.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
So kudos. Because
that's what they invoked. Yeah.
Slow clap for the costumes.
Woo!
Like, it's really effed up and weird.
Yeah. So
John doesn't know what to do. This is the point that you mentioned before where he's like, and you know that John Constantine is out of ideas when he's like,
okay, God.
What's up, God?
I know I'm not your favorite.
Long time, first time.
Yeah.
And doesn't get a response, and so he tries the other route, and he
tries to commit suicide.
He uses a piece of broken glass to slit his wrists, because he knows that once he dies, it's been said that his soul is the one soul that Satan himself would come to Earth to collect.
Yep,
and he does.
Satan himself says that.
Peter Stromare.
Yeah, and Satan himself says that. Like in
perfect casting of Satan, if you ask me, in a great touch. He appears from the top of the frame coming down.
Yes.
Almost with the feet, almost like Jesus sort of descending to earth instead of ascending. And tar drips from his feet. Now, I don't know if that's supposed to be just like hot hell tar, or if it's sort of like, screw you, Constantine, you almost died from lung cancer from smoking.
Yeah, I don't know. Either way, it works for me.
And so he shows up and he's like, oh boy, John, I didn't think that you'd take the coward's way out, but you want to get to it? Let's do it. I got a whole theme park of red delights for you in hell.
Yeah.
Well, I should mention real quick that we actually don't even have to mention it. The story works without it, but there's this mechanic that when people are dying or close to dying, that time sort of stops in the real world and then continues sort of in hell. And they go to great pains to explain that. The only thing they really need it for is to make this last encounter more exciting.
Yes.
Because John's thrown out of the room. Gabriel's got the Spear of Destiny, and they do this thing where she's going to stab, and she almost stabs Angela, and then time freezes.
Yep.
And they're using their cool gap commercial camera technology, you know, to kind of go around. So that's the only reason that happens. But there's a great thing where before he cuts his wrists, he takes his watch off, which I thought was like, that's kind of a little grace note.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason they do it is he puts the watch on the ground, and then after he slit his wrists, we don't see him. It's not explicit, which is a nice touch too. The camera pulls in, and then it shifts, and we see it from that aerial perspective again. Now his wrists are bleeding, and then we focus in on the watch, and the blood is going past the watch on the ground, but the hands slow down and stop because time is stopping.
Yeah.
And then the blood stops moving too, and it's like, all right, somebody thought about this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was Francis Lawrence, but...
I don't know either, but somebody thought about it, and it's all this stuff makes... there are elements that make this film really endearing and charming, and
it was thought all the way through.
Yeah.
You can disagree with some choices, like him being an American. There are things that you can specifically take umbrage with, but like a lot of films that are just thrown together, they thought about all this. And it's funny to note that if you have the Blu-ray of it, like I do,
mm-hmm.
there are a lot of deleted scenes. There are entire things that they cut out of this.
Oh, wow.
You'll notice that before the scene where he kills like 40 demons, one of them is Michelle Monaghan, who wasn't quite as famous in 2005 as she is now, but you kind of go, oh, were you going to be in this more? And then you just got cut out?
Yep.
And yeah, she was. She actually was playing Ellie, which is a character from the comics. She's a demon succubus, and she has a sort of, you know, will they, won't they? They did sort of relationship with John. But I think they cut him out of the film to make him a more lonely character.
Okay.
And also, apparently, he can't get laid at all because he doesn't even get it on with Angela. Like, there's just nothing there.
They kiss.
Married to his work.
Yep.
So, yes, Satan is there. He is more than happy to start the train and let's get you on down to hell, buddy. Get your shoes off.
Yep.
Get you into a nice hot bath. And John says, who can talk while he's dead?
Yeah.
You know, your son is in the other room. And he's like, oh, boys will be boys.
He's like, with Gabriel.
Well, there's no accounting for taste.
Yeah.
And they have the Spear of Destiny. And that Satan knows what that means. It means that he wants to be born into the earth and start his own side business franchise.
And he was like, I don't believe you. This is one of your tricks. And he's like, go see for yourself.
Yep. And Satan goes in there. It's weird in a movie where you're rooting for Satan.
Yep, but you are.
Well, what you're rooting for is, and maybe this is bad ultimately. John wouldn't want everybody in the world to be tortured with like the apocalypse, but
no.
Ultimately he does maintain the balance because he actually kind of supports the establishment. Because
mm-hmm.
calling Satan in to stop Satan 2 from getting busy is sort of going, this is the thing where I don't like the balance. I don't like the establishment, but it's better than what lies beyond it.
Exactly.
Trump 2016. So, yes, Satan intervenes. He saves Angela and he faces down Gabriel, who is scared of Satan,
mm-hmm.
which you wouldn't think would be true.
No.
She tries to attack, let's just say she, that's her pronoun.
Sure.
She tries to attack Lucifer, and she can't, because God apparently knows what's going on now and isn't powering her anymore.
Yeah.
And so
she's like, forgive me, Father, and she's like, begs for forgiveness, and she just kind of drags away.
Lucifer, sort of blows her away, and then comes back, and which is an awesome scene. He's like, all this stuff goes on. The mammon gets sucked back down to hell in this. So, okay, this once again, mirrors.
Yeah.
Peter Stormare is holding Rachel Weisz.
Yes.
And then we pan down to the floor that's all wet, and we see the reflection. And in the reflection, he is holding the struggling demon.
Yes.
And then once he sends the demon back to hell,
mm-hmm.
the skies open. Actually, the ceiling opens, and we see the reflection of the hospital going up, only going down into perspective. Of he throws Mammon into the upside down sky, which I guess would be hell in the upside down world.
So, yeah.
So he goes back. It's all done. Sits back on the chair and he's like, "All right, what do you want? I guess I owe you a favor for, you know, keeping me in my throne and keeping me in place. So what do you want? You want like a couple more years or what is it?" And Constantine says, "Well, no. What I want is I want for Angela's sister to be allowed to go to heaven." And he's like, "All right, great."
He's like, "Really? Okay.
Let's go to hell."
Yep, it's done.
But as it turns out, he doesn't have to go because as soon as that happens, heaven portal opens, I guess.
Yeah.
And John Constantine's soul is pulled to heaven because of the sacrifice he made saving that girl from hell. He is redeemed and can go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you have to ask for forgiveness, I'm not sure that totally works out.
I don't know.
Maybe
if
God
it does
just
either.
Given him the benefit of the doubt. He did pray before.
He did.
And so as he's being pulled off to heaven, John Constantine can't resist one little gesture. Gives Satan the finger as he's being led to heaven, which of course Satan's like, "No, that's not going to work." So so the devil heals his body. He takes away his cancer. He heals his wrist and he makes him whole again, saying that you're going to have the chance. You're a bad person and you're going to earn your way down there.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to give you some more time to do it.
Yeah.
Which is like, all right, well, we'll see. At least I'm alive.
And that's like a way that Satan kind of wins.
Well, I don't know if he wins,
really,
but
wants his soul.
He definitely, yeah, it's he does kind of give him an extension, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But now I think we're led to believe that, you know, John's slate is clean or at least neutral now. Like it is up to him how he lives his life from here on out. Angela's okay. He gives her the spear to hide, knowing that she is, I don't want to say strong female character, but she is very canny and very capable in this film. It's only near the third act that she gets to get treated kind of like a damsel in distress.
Right.
And they don't kiss because I guess Constantine doesn't do that.
Let me tell you one thing. They kissed
Constantine
earlier.
In the comics,
yeah,
he gets in on all the time.
Yeah, I know.
In fact, that gets him into trouble a lot of the time.
Of course it does.
And as he looks out of the city and he's like, "Well, another adventure." He takes up out a pack and he knocks out a piece of nicotine gum and chews it.
Yeah,
this almost ruins the film for me. I know in a Hollywood movie, a character needs to change and grow,
yes,
and be different. But you've spent 2 hours telling us that this implacable character will take on heaven and hell for his principles and won't move or budge for anybody. And he's going to switch to nicotine gum?
Just like that.
It would have been the perfect like exclamation point or like F you on the end of the film where he's like, tap, tap, and his lights up and just starts it all over again.
No, I agree.
That's his self-destructive streak.
Yes.
That's his, "Well, I guess I better take this gum now because, you know, I got a second chance." He's like, "I don't like the fact I got a second chance. I don't want your charity and I don't want your pity.
Don't
give me some silk cuts."
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you. It would have been better if he had taken out a cigarette.
Although people would have hated the movie even more than they did, I think.
Probably.
What about Angel LaBeouf? Heaven Stevens.
Oh, yeah. Meh. Yeah. Didn't really need that. No. Although, I think that Marvel gets credited for putting in the after credit scene. this movie does it too, so just saying.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, they did it in Ferris Bueller, so.
That is also true.
Any other scattered comments about the film?
Scattered comments. I really enjoy this film. I don't think it deserves the bad rap that it has. I think it's really enjoyable. There are a couple of line readings that Keanu does that I'm just kind of like, but it's nothing like.
Really?
Just a little bit, but it's nothing horrible. It's nothing that really takes me out. And you just love seeing him do what he does.
Yeah, I still think that, I think you're right. I think it like doesn't work, but it kind of works. I mean, Keanu is too sweet to be this big of a dick. But it's like I said before, like I think it's like the face that he puts on.
Yeah.
I don't know if it convinces other people. It doesn't convince the audience, but it's not supposed to, because in this, he's the guy that would chew the gum at the end. He's supposed to be a little more good than he is bad.
Right. Exactly.
I can't wait for Friday. You read Hellblazer, you find out what a bastard John Constantine really is. Yeah. But otherwise, there's things like, you know, the cat spell is kind of BS, I think. I don't think they wanted to scare off all the norms with, like, "I'm going to need some blood from a baby for this." Or, you know, they just wanted to make the spells quick and easy as possible, because it's really more of like a psychic kind of movie.
Yeah.
Like a scanners thing. Then and magic, but whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And they didn't want to, like, use occult symbols necessarily.
Yeah, they didn't want to get, like, too much. There wasn't a lot, like, a lot of pentagrams or anything like
no.
that. It's pretty sanitized. Mm-hmm. But here's the deal. It's really easy, I think, for a author or a visual designer to get caught up in that part of it. So it's like,
oh,
we've got skull candles and, you know, skull rings and lots of skulls.
Yeah, an upside down cross.
Yeah, it's
going to
look like a
that.
Kids in the Hall sketch about a teenage Satanist.
Right.
They don't get caught up in that sort of
no.
thing. The club is kind of dumb. Once again, it's that, like, sanitized, like, PG-13 kind of evil
yeah.
where he goes to this club and, like, there are angels and demons who all hang out there.
Yes. Because
apparently angels want to go to a skeezy club too.
Apparently.
And, like, they're all, like, eating what is possibly a living person on a table, but there's no blood. And then, like, ooh, two ladies are kissing each other. So crazy. But then there's one great thing where there's a bunch of people sitting around a thing, and then an angel, like, leans down and casually blows on, like, five goblets full of water, and they all turn to wine. And it's like, I see what you did there. It's pretty good.
It's a nice touch.
Yeah. And they're not playing a Rob Zombie song, but, like, kind of discount Rob Zombie. So,
yeah.
All right. Well,
yeah.
Recommend?
I would definitely recommend this movie.
We talk about this being a failure. It made $230 million on a $100 million budget.
That's crazy.
Now, that might be, I think that domestic is involved. And this mm-hmm. actually was, it took a lot to get this movie made. And it actually is a co-production with a couple German conglomerates. There's like eight
wow.
producers on this film. So
jeez.
I think it barely got made. And then maybe they thought, well, it didn't make enough to justify doing another one.
Yeah.
At least to pay Keanu Reeves, you know, the most famous guy in the world, to do another one. So.
Right. Well, I think, wasn't it like originally... Nicolas Cage was originally
okay,
attached
now,
to the role.
That would have been a worse movie, but I still want to see it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think this movie was trying to, like, the film was in the scope to be developed as far back as 1997. So.
Yeah, yeah, it was, yeah. And Alan Moore, we haven't even mentioned him yet, completely, as per usual, divorced from the character.
Yeah.
He did what he usually does, which is he just says, take my cut and just split it up amongst the other collaborators, which is nice. I wish that he would accept his cut and then give it to the comic book legal defense fund or something like that.
Right.
Or like a children's hospital.
Something.
In England or something. But
yeah.
Whatever. I'm sure, you know, John Totleben does that with his cut or something like that.
Right.
Okay. Well, I would recommend it too. Yeah. Like I said, this is one of those borderline ones. I know people that definitely like it. Although I think when you hear it mentioned, it's usually like, that movie.
Constantine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see Constantine appear in the current DC Extended Universe.
That would be amazing.
Imagine Keanu Reeves bouncing. I'm sure they'd love to have him. Keanu Reeves bouncing off of Ben Affleck and Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
Be awesome.
It would be awesome.
And he's older now, so it'd be like older Constantine.
That is a movie I would actually like to see.
Sorry, Matt Ryan. I just don't. You keep doing the voice, though. That'd be fun. You keep doing that. Well, it's October now, and I think that we kind of unconsciously set this up already, but we should do spooky, scary movies. Spooky, spooky movies. This is a movie about demons and devils, and we should do some movies about, like, vampires and werewolves. So all this month, we're going to be doing scary, bad movies.
Yes.
For Crafted Services. And on our next show, going from hell to hell, I think we'll do Event Horizon, a space horror movie, which I think might be one of my favorite genres.
Mm-hmm.
I love space movies, and I like horror movies, but I really love space horror movies.
Sure.
Nobody else did. This one's 24%. Not well received at the time, but it's one of those films that I feel like I hear people talking about or they reference all the time.
Mm-hmm.
in a funny twist, it is an early Paul W.S. Anderson film.
Wow, I did not realize that.
Yeah, kind of like the poor man. If the poor man's Zack Snyder had a poor man's Zack Snyder...
Wow.
It's the Resident Evil guy.
Oh, okay.
Hell is other people in space. Next time on Crafted Services. All right, so there you go. I hope you enjoyed that. If you've seen the film, I hope you enjoyed us talking about it. If you haven't seen the film, sorry for spoiling a lot of it, but I definitely think that you should check this out if you're interested in the character, in Vertigo in general, in a scary movie that I think blends action and scary pretty well.
Yeah.
And if you miss Got a Machine Head, better than the rest, green to red, Machine Head, 16 Stone?
I don't know.
Bush?
Oh, yes.
So young.
Wow.
So young.
I age myself.
Maybe check it out. Next time on the show, this Friday, speaking of the devil, literally, we're talking about Hellblazer, Dangerous Habits storyline, issues 41 through 46, which this film, we never even mentioned, drew heavily upon.
Yes.
Almost took all of it.
Yeah.
Essentially. Very different. And we will talk about that on our Week of Constantine. We'll talk about that on our next show. And we'll see what they did right, what they did wrong, what they decided to keep, what they let go, and talk about the real Constantine.
Okay.
The Constantine, as he's called. We'll talk about that. And other little surprises along the way. Be surprised by our audaciousness on social media at Facebook and Twitter and other locations. Also, you can find us on iTunes if you search for Just Enough Trope. You can find our show page. Please go there. Please subscribe because I got to tell you, that's the best way to get the show. The second that it is ready to go, it will be there waiting for you and you can listen to it. After you've listened to it, give us a review. Why don't you please? We love to hear from the fans. We love to hear how you think we're doing and what you'd like us to do on the show next and what you've enjoyed us talking about. So far, if you don't like Constantine, I apologize for this week. Actually, I don't. I don't care. I love Constantine. And that character needs some rehabilitation.
Yeah.
He's not doing much right now.
No, he's not.
Bad show. Bad ending of his comic. He's in a comic called Constantine Now, which is kind of like Vertigo, Diet Vertigo.
Oh.
So he needs some help.
Yeah.
We're going to get there. We're going to get there together.
Yes.
And while you're there on iTunes, give us a rating if you don't mind. It really helps us when you give us a high rating. We move up in the ranks. iTunes knows that we're doing a good job. Everybody gets what they want. So while you're there, give us 5 holy symbols.
Yes.
And then maybe on the 6th one, it's like, oh, this is it. This is the one. And then you place it on a girl's head and it burns. It burns. And that's all you have to do?
Yeah.
That's how you
exercise a demon. That's somebody. What Constantine has taught me.
Demons need to exercise sometimes or they get fat.
So, yeah. And you don't want fat demons.
Well, let's not deal with all those demonological issues. And you can just give us 5 stars and we'd appreciate that. Like I said, on our next show, it's Comic Book Club. We're talking about Hellblazer, Dangerous Habits, issues 41 to 46. So join us for that. We're going to sign off for tonight. I'm your host, Caliban.
I'm your co-host, Mikan Hana.
Keep the geek fires burning.